Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Busy little evening ahead of us, I do believe. Good evening. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. Several different things in several different directions facing us this evening. But first and foremost, let me make you aware of something coming up at 6:30 p.m. We're going to be having a conversation with Maryland Democratic Party Chair Susie Turnbull. You've heard Susie on the program in the past from remote events in D.C., Campaign for America's Future, the health care conference we attended last January, among other things. You've heard her on Guy James's show in the past as well. We're going to be talking about a particular issue that is out there on the radar right now that I think it would behoove us to be aware of. And what I mean by that in particular is the Violence Against Women Act. I know we get ourselves, well, we look at a lot of stuff in the course of any given program. This one, however, I think deserves some of our attention. And Susie has a role in trying to get this bill passed. And it makes a great deal of sense to me that we would pursue passage of a bill like this. I first heard about it in a blast email from Bob Furtick over at Democrats.com. It is the International Violence Against Women Act, and we will try to find out what it encompasses and what its stated goals are when Susie Turnbull comes along at the bottom of this hour. Beyond that, what else this evening? Sometimes you don't know. Well, sometimes it's like being it's the old thing about the lady or the tiger. You know, behind one door is a tiger, behind the other door is a beautiful lady. Only, in our case, sometimes it's just all tigers. And it feels, and sometimes Moran Monday finds a way to stretch over into Thursday, and this is one of those. I tell you what, just to keep things interesting, let's start the program with an offering from the Moran side. Hateful, miserable, rotten, right-wing morons. In this case, I'm talking about Haley Barbour. You know, Haley Barbour, former Republican National Committee Chair, governor of Mississippi at this point in time. He has been remember, this is the same Haley Barbour who said, "Y'all come on down here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Have a good old time, Waller in the oil. That's liquid gold, that's what that is. Y'all come on down to our oily coast." You know, that Haley Barbour. Well, sometimes how do you do this without screaming? The best I can do is simply read the excerpt from the news story. Now, Haley Barbour, after first saying, oh, come on down to our Mississippi Gulf Coast and look at the pretty oil, it's a tourist attraction too, you know. After doing that, Haley Barbour then took a second look and said, well, this could turn out to be something catastrophic and terrible. But now he's reversed direction again. Yesterday, I'm going to screw this up because it looks like in French Petitbois Island, somebody help me. For all I know, in Mississippi, it's Petitbois, but it's Petitbois Island. Haley Barbour took a visit down there yesterday and saw that the oil that had come ashore had been washed away by storms. Praise Jeebus. So he went back onto back behind the podium and said, I don't think this island was hurt one iota. No, really. Out of sight, out of mind as far as toxic waste and Haley Barbour are concerned. In particular, there is a news story from the Bellingham Herald that features the following language.
Mississippi Department of Environmental Quality Director Trudy Fisher said samples of what was apparently the same oil slick taken when it was farther south of the Barrier Islands were non-toxic. Fisher said water and weather had helped all the volatile chemicals in the oil evaporate.
Really? Is evaporate I've just got to ask real quick. Is that some sort of magic? That evaporate thing? Science people, courtesy phone. Evaporate doesn't mean magically disappeared. It means it went into the air, atmosphere, right? Kind of, sort of. Or did it precipitate? Which would mean it came out in solution and sort of settled to the bottom. Anyway, no. Trudy Fisher said samples of what was apparently the same oil slick taken when it was farther south of the Barrier Islands were non-toxic and said water and weather had helped all the volatile chemicals in the oil evaporate. So then Haley Barbour, Mississippi scientist, stepped in and described the oil, quote, as weathered, emulsified, camel-colored mousse, like the food mousse. You know, Haley, I got to tell you, buddy, that doesn't clear much up. There's food mousse, four legs, caribou Barbie likes to shoot it, and then there's that whipped, fluffy, pudding-like concoction mousse. You know, like the food mousse. Food mousse. You know, around here we've got a chain of grocery stores called Food Lion. Wonder what the prices are like at Food Mousse. But then he said, once it gets to this stage, you know, that stage where it's weathered, emulsified, camel-colored mousse, like the food mousse. Y'all just get you a spoonful now of that food mousse. Once it gets to this stage, it's not poisonous. But if a small animal got coated enough with it, it could smother it. But if you got enough toothpaste on you, you couldn't breathe. But you would smell minty fresh when you died, right? Haley? Yeah, yep. A pelican or some seabird or perhaps a dolphin or a porpoise coated in that food mousse is the same as being covered in toothpaste. You couldn't breathe. Same with the food mousse oil. Y'all come on down to the casinos on the Gulf Coast. We'll give you a free $50 worth of chips and a tank of gasoline when you get... Now, there may be some water in the gasoline because we're taking it straight out of the water, out of the ocean, you know. But, you know, a little can of that dry gas fix it all up for you. For I am Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi and moron in chief of the state. Kind of makes my little pumpkin head hurt. You know,
food mousse. You got enough toothpaste on you, you couldn't breathe neither. That's it. Toxic waste, toothpaste, same thing. Now, this isn't just Mississippi, mind you, but as of June the 2nd, yesterday, there are 604 dead birds, 253 dead sea turtles, and 29 mammals, including dolphins, that have been accounted for thus far. That is, you know, seen with the human eye and added to the tally. Wow. You know, they probably overfilled themselves eating that weathered, emulsified, camel-colored mousse like the food mousse. Mama always told me, no, don't you fill it. You just eat till you're not hungry, not till you're full up. They had too much of that food mousse. Dolphins supposed to be eating little fishies, not mooses. Jesus. You know, it's stuff like this that makes you wonder, is this something we can ever get over? Because as long as stupid is even in the process of the discussion, we're screwed. Did you know that? We're screwed, blued, and tattooed. And there is stupid plenty to go around. You want to hear what passes for desperation message management right now? Yeah, check this out. BP's going to make it all better. BP is on your side, right?
The Gulf spill is a tragedy that never should have happened. I'm Tony Hayward. BP has taken full responsibility for cleaning up the spill in the Gulf.
Liar.
We've helped organize the largest environmental response in this country's history.
Liar.
More than 2 million feet of boom, 30 planes, and over 1,300 boats are working to protect the shoreline.
Funny, he doesn't mention the army of lawyers, but we'll get to it.
Where oil reaches the shore, thousands of people are ready to clean it up.
We will. As long as the cameras are rolling and Barack Obama is there, after that we throw them out on their ass again.
We'll honor all legitimate claims, and our cleanup efforts will not come at any cost to taxpayers. To those affected in your families, I'm deeply sorry. The Gulf is home for thousands of BP employees, and we all feel the impact.
And I want my life back.
To all the volunteers, and for the strong support of the government, thank you. We know it is our responsibility to keep you informed and do everything we can so this never happens again. We will get this done. We will make this right.
At least that's what I'm saying on a commercial. But after the cameras stop rolling, I say, F you, we're BP. Right, right.
There's that line in there about all the volunteers and the yada, yada, yada.
BP has taken full responsibility for cleaning up the spill in the Gulf. We've helped organize the largest environmental response in this country's history.
As long as anybody's watching.
More than 2 million feet of boom, 30 planes, and over 1,300 boats are working to protect the shoreline. Where oil reaches the shore, thousands of people are ready to clean it up. We will honor all legitimate claims, and our cleanup efforts will not.
Our definition of what is legitimate is, however, a rather narrow standard. Does it contribute to Tony getting his new Bentley this year? Legitimate. Does it not contribute to Tony getting his Bentley this year? Not legitimate. You understand, of course. Yes, I knew you would. There's only one problem. All those people that have been deployed, there's some other people that have been deployed, too. Although they have denied it. Deny everything, admit nothing. BP has been doing everything it can to keep people from even getting to public areas to see the horror and hell on earth that that corporate monstrosity has unleashed. A number of news outlets, some for-profit, some not, have noted that BP has blocked them from photographing dead animals, environmental degradation on the Gulf Coast. But BP and the U.S. Coast Guard have said, did not. And in fact, this was posted at deepwaterhorizonresponse.com. Neither BP nor the U.S. Coast Guard, who are responding to the spill, have any rules in place that would prohibit media access to impacted areas, where, and we were disappointed to hear of this incident. In fact, media has been actively embedded and allowed to cover response efforts since this response began, with more than 400 embeds aboard boats and aircraft to date. Just today, 16 members of the press observed cleanup operations on a vessel out of Venice, Louisiana. The only time anyone would be asked to move from an area would be if there were safety concerns or if they were interfering with response operations. Right? Oopsie. Or should I say, busted! A student journalism initiative that was sponsored by the Carnegie and Knight Foundations, known as Powering a Nation, got their hands on a contract. That's right, a contract. You know, a binding promise between parties. Legal. Sort of. That BP compelled local boat operators to sign before they would be paid to help in the cleanup. And the coverage regarding that contract said the contract included a clause prohibiting them and their deckhands from making, quote, news releases, marketing presentation, or any other public statements while working on the cleanup. It also included an additional section entitled Agreement Regarding Proprietary and Confidential Information, which states that workers cannot disclose data gathered while on the job, including plans, reports, information, and the ever-present, etc. Yeah, really. Article 22, Jesus, it had 22 articles. Article 22 of the contract. Vessel owner and employees will not make news releases, marketing presentation, or any other public statements. This charter or charterer or the services performed under this charter without charterer's prior written approval. Vessel owner agrees that such approval is at the sole discretion of the charterer.
Oh, heck no, we weren't clamping down on no information. We weren't trying to keep any people from getting information about what the kind of nightmare of hellish bit of misery we've unleashed on the good. We weren't doing that. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, we were.
Oopsie. Sorry. So, you have to take that into account when you hear Tony Hayward say things like,
come at any cost to taxpayers. To those affected in your families, I'm deeply sorry. The Gulf is home for thousands of BP employees, and we all feel the impact.
So, you know, it makes it almost sound like BP employees in the Gulf are right there by the dolphins and the sea turtles. You can almost see them out there, you know, balancing the little rubber balls on their noses. Yeah, see, that's the problem, isn't it? You can't trust them. There's no reason to trust them. Because being a multinational corporation, they are prone to lying in their own best interest, which they call business ethics. N'est-ce pas? Oui, oui. And as was mentioned on the program, part of that lying now involves cutting a paycheck for a woman by the name of Ann Womack Colton.
Ann Womack Colton, being the former press secretary for Dick Cheney back when he shot a guy in the face. So, you know, just saying. Haven't seen anything yet as to whether BP has cut a check for the families grieving from their loss. You know, 11 grieving families. From 11 dead workers who are practically forgotten at this point. Just saying. So, you know, there's that. Brutal business. Brutal business. And water. Water. Why does, well, of course, no, not why, but I can't help but have Samuel Taylor Coleridge's Rime of the Ancient Mariner come to mind with that one line that is known so well now. Water, water, everywhere, nor any drop to drink. Ken Ward, our friend over at the Charleston Gazette, wvgazette.com, he writes the Cole Tattoo blog. Ken Ward posting a story yesterday headlined, Gauley River, that's G-A-U-L-E-Y, Gauley River, one of the most endangered in the nation. Threats from continued mountaintop removal and expanded oil and gas drilling have landed two West Virginia waterways on an advocacy group's annual list of the nation's most endangered rivers. American Rivers put the Gauley and Monongahela in its yearly report, America's Most Endangered Rivers, scheduled for release yesterday. The Washington, D.C.-based group cited ongoing mountaintop removal in the 20 Mile and Peters Creek watersheds as a major threat to the Gauley and pollution from oil and gas drilling as a growing danger to the Monongahela. You may recall that the Monongahela headwaters rise in north-central West Virginia, flowing northward where it meets the Allegheny River to form the Great Ohio River. We used to tell jokes at WVU about why the Monongahela River flows north. I won't tell that now because I have dear, dear friends who are listeners in Pittsburgh and friends who are from Pittsburgh, and hell, I like Pittsburgh. It's one of my favorite cities, but yeah, the Monongahela River is tormented and tortured once again by our national profit-driven obsession with making a buck off of toxic waste from inside the earth. See, that's what fossil fuels are. They're not fossil fuels. They are toxic waste from inside the earth that was safely, neatly, and nicely tucked away inside the earth until the greedy bastards figured out that they could make a buck off of them by burning them and releasing their crap into the air for us to breathe and the waste into the ground where it gets into our water and flows into our rivers like the Gauley. Well, Bob, why are you talking about the Gauley River? The Gauley River, as the crow flies, is about 2 miles from me. Maybe three, maybe four. It hurtles down through a beautiful canyon. And as a child, my mother and her family, my grandmother, my grandfather, would walk down there in summer to pick blackberries and raspberries at a place called the Bend of Gauley. And it's a huge bow-shaped loop in the river with land on this side that juts out into it. And to see it is to see something that verges on a vision of paradise. Great rocks sticking up out of the riverbed, the water flowing around it, cool even at the height of brutal summer, cooled by the mountains from which it rises. And it is toxic, and it is poison. American Rivers said the following in regard to the Gauley. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and cooperating agencies must stop the permitting of mine activity that harms the clean water and natural areas that are essential to the health and heritage of Appalachian communities. See, the Gauley River is a national park. It has some federal protection, but apparently not nearly enough. It's been protected since 1988 as the Gauley River National Recreation Area. The Gauley River and the New River, between which I live, comes together down at the foot of the mountain on top of which I live, and forms the Great Kanawha River that flows past Charleston and down to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, known to the native peoples once upon a time as Two Endy Way, whereat the first battle of the American Revolution was fought. Sorry, Lexington and Concord, it's true. And empties into the Ohio River, which empties into the Mississippi, which empties into the Gulf, which already has problems of its own. How can one country so mistreat itself in the name of the profits of a tiny handful of avarice-eaten, broken-brained, semi-psychopathic freaks? How? Well, the answer's easy. They bought them. The freaks bought the government. The Gauley is also, along with the New, a tourist draw, but not for long. Thanks, coal industry! We had a little itsy-bitsy growing little tourism industry that started after the last time the coal industry left this region high and dry. Starve! Left us high and dry. Little tourism industry grew up around people who wanted to go really fast down really white water in really rubber rafts and canoes and kayaks and so forth. And now it's a multi-million dollar a year industry. Granted, most of the people around here don't see any of the benefit from it, but it is. But of course, the coal industry will have none of that and will not be happy until, just like the Gulf of Mexico, the Gauley River is poisoned and dead. So that's the beginning of the show. It's about 28 minutes past the hour. We will take a little break right now. Coming up, a conversation with Susie Turnbull, chair of the Maryland Democratic Party, and a member of a leading coalition of interfaith groups helping with the International Violence Against Women Act. Susie Turnbull will join us momentarily. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob, and we'll be back.
Of this brotherhood of man. or whatever that means, into a crisis.
About 24 minutes before the hour, this is The Horn. I'm Bob, and we're back. And with me on the phone right now, in a matter of just a couple of seconds, Susie Turnbull. Susie is a Democratic Party activist and a human rights activist in her own right. She's chair of the Maryland Democratic Party, also part of the Democratic National Committee. And more importantly, in this regard, she is a member of an organization called Jewish Women International, which organization, a large one at that, convened in the last couple of years the Interfaith Domestic Violence Coalition, and has taken a leading role in seeking passage of something I mentioned at the beginning of the program, namely the International Violence Against Women Act. And I saw the story about this legislation, and I immediately... it just yelled out to me, we got to put some light on this. So let me bring Susie on the air here. Hey, Susie, thanks for joining us, and I really appreciate your time this evening.
Great to be with you. I'm looking forward to talk to you about something that's really very, very important.
Well, you know, we have a lot on our plates right now, Susie, from disasters in the Gulf of Mexico to disasters here in Appalachia. ongoing wars, and well, it would be easy to say, let's deal with this later. But when you get right down to it, the violence against women goes to the very heart, I think, of violence against the planet. And so, if you would please, can you give us a little bit of a background on what the legislation itself is?
Sure. And one I wanted to make sure is that people understand that 1 in 3 women will experience domestic violence in her lifetime. 1 in 6 women has experienced an attempted or completed rape, and 1 in 12 women will be stalked in her lifetime. What we've seen in the last few weeks, particularly in light of the tragedy at the University of Virginia, teens and young adults are particularly impacted by partner violence. Individuals aged 16 to 24 experience the highest per capita rate of violence, and 1 in 5 high school girls reports physical or sexual abuse from a dating partner. It's really an amazing, the statistics are amazing when you think about it. And the International Violence Against Women Act, called IVAWA, is a historic and unprecedented effort by the U.S. to comprehensively address violence against women worldwide. Originally, it was introduced, but it wasn't passed in the 110th Congress. It's a result of a direct response to the statistics that I just mentioned. And it would direct the U.S. government to create a comprehensive 5-year strategy to reducing such violence in 10 to 20 diverse countries that have egregious levels of violence against women and girls. The legislation would put the issue in its proper context as a human rights violation of epidemic proportions, and it would tackle the life-threatening challenges of extreme poverty, HIV/AIDS, and other health risks that affect the well-being of women and girls worldwide.
And it really is cross-cultural, isn't it? It crosses economic boundaries, cultural boundaries, racial boundaries, because the things that you just described are not a function of the developed world or the undeveloped world. This truly is something that afflicts the entire globe, isn't it?
That's exactly true. The legislation is going to commit the United States to address rape as a weapon of war, which is something we have heard a lot about over the last several years, sexual coercion, honor killings, dowry-related deaths. There's female genital cutting. I mean, horrible things, human trafficking, and economic conditions that can oppress women on a global scale. There's a broad-based coalition, including the Family Violence Prevention Fund, Amnesty International, World Thrive Worldwide, to galvanize grassroots support. And locally, when I say locally, and domestically, JWI and other groups are part of the Interfaith Domestic Violence Coalition, which started about 2 years ago. The idea is to put the collective energies of faith communities into advancing federal domestic violence policy and legislation. It's the first of its kind. It's comprised of 24 member organizations that represent millions of congregants spanning the United Methodist, Catholic, Evangelical, Presbyterian, United Church of Christ, Mennonite, Unitarian, Muslim, Baha'i communities. I mean, a great number of communities. But all share the same core values and concern for the safety and well-being of women and girls.
Well, in the definitions as you described them, Susie, you mentioned the use of rape as a weapon of war. In defining violence against women that way, would the legislation empower the State Department to do anything with regard to nations where this sort of horror is practiced? More than a simple condemnation of it, what kind of teeth does it have?
Well, it's the first time, so it's basically a comprehensive approach, and the idea is that it would address this by sending a message that reducing violence is a U.S. foreign policy priority. A lot of this would be handled through the State Department, and the effort would be one. The first bill, Ivawa, was originally championed by then-Senator Biden and then-Senator Clinton. And so the idea here is that you have two people now who are in such strong, important positions on the foreign policy stage that they're, that particularly the State Department would take the lead in addressing this violence against women. One of the good things about our current State Department as well is that there's a woman named Milan Verveer who is an ambassador at large on the issue of women, working out of the State Department. And Milan is someone who was involved in the creation of an organization called Vital Voices, which works for female empowerment, women's empowerment around the world, based in the U.S., based in Washington, D.C., to help support women and gain political strength. And the political strength hopefully will then help curb this violence.
Just for folks who are wanting to look it up and such, since this is online and everybody's at a computer somewhere for the most part, we're talking about H.R. 4594 and S2982. That's their current designations within this Congress. Where does the act stand with regard to those pieces of legislation in committee? Have there been hearings? What's the present status?
Sure. Well, Chairman Berman, Howard Berman, and the House Committee on Foreign Affairs is going to be marking up the bill shortly, and we are urging the Senate to follow suit. Just last week, I was able to speak at the Democratic Senate Steering and Policy Committee, and basically what I urged them was to help move this bill to the Senate floor this summer so that it can be passed prior to the August recess. That is the hope, and that is the goal. The people who are most involved on the bill, obviously it's in Chairman Berman's committee on the House side. In the House, Representative Bill Delahunt of Massachusetts is one of the co-sponsors, as well as the chair of Ted Poe, the co-chair of the Congressional Victims Rights Caucus. In the Senate, it's Senator John Kerry, chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and Senator Boxer, Collins, and Snow, who are the leaders. What I know also on the House side, it is the case that Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois is playing a leading role in helping push this legislation.
Is this, and forgive me because I'm not, my mind doesn't work the way Washington's does sometimes, I think, Susie. This strikes me as a real no-brainer. This is easy. Why wouldn't we pass this?
Exactly. Actually, one of the concerns that we hope does not get involved in this is the coalition is pushing that it be restricted and made that it is a part of this foreign policy issue. It is an issue directly on domestic violence, and that no other issues get pulled into it, that it doesn't become part of the abortion debate, for example, that it really stands on its own legs, and that it doesn't get muddied is really about it. I have links that I can urge people to go to
do please.
Okay. www.jwi.org is Jewish Women International's website. And if you go on the tab that says Take Action and then go to the Interfaith Coalition, one can see the Interfaith Domestic Violence Coalition. And click on that and read about the coalition's February 2008 briefing about what occurred on the Hill. We also have specific information about the legislation itself, again, in Take Action under Advocacy Initiatives. We talk about a little bit about health care reform, but there's also a tab for the International Violence Against Women Act. So that one can click on that, go directly to the links for the legislation itself to review the legislation itself. But it's companion bills on both sides. We're very enthusiastic, and the notion that this interfaith coalition has worked together, recognizing that domestic violence survivors often turn to their religious leaders and houses of worship for support, and they look for guidance and refuge during times of abuse. That's why this started. It's representing, as I said, millions of congregants from different faith communities who guide our moral, religious, and ethical commitments, guide our work in ending violence against women.
And it also, but it doesn't it doesn't simply treat, just to make this clear for folks listening, it doesn't simply treat this issue as an issue that is a problem somewhere else, because here in the United States we have a massive problem in our own right. Correct?
Exactly. Because in fact, the Violence Against Women Act will be up for renewal as well in a year. And that was a landmark piece of legislation that seeks to improve criminal justice and community-based responses to domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking in the U.S. I mean, the numbers are always pretty remarkable in seeing what is available. And there's, again, on our website, one can go to the information about VAWA, and see the details of the legislation. But we know that efforts are going to be made to ensure that this isn't just somebody else's problem. This is all of our problem. In some countries, abuse can reach the number of 70%. So that's why this bill, that the international bill was introduced. And this year is the 15th anniversary of the Violence Against Women Act. That was really breakthrough legislation. The coalition is looking for, increased funding for their reauthorization and a recognition that there's a commitment to ending dating violence and a dedication to prevention programming for youth in the upcoming reauthorization.
Can with the Violence Against Women Act, Susie, can we point to, over the course of those 15 years, can we point to real successes and say that it has had a hopefully dramatic impact in raising not just awareness, but in combating the causation itself?
I think you can say that. I mean, I think that we I'm sure that the details will show you that is the case. I would really need to look at that. But what I can tell you is that it is clearly the case that if one focuses on prevention versus and teaching people about healthy relationships, about being hands on deck, making sure that public schools to faith communities, from parents to teachers, from the corporate leadership to others, make this a priority. We've not done enough to prevent violence, to educate young people about the signs of abuse. The simple fact that the front pages of our newspaper just 2 weeks ago or a few weeks ago of the brutal murder at the University of Virginia, we know that people are at the greatest risk for violence and that what we need to do is to prevent violence, is to educate young people about the signs of abuse and to require that universities have the protections and the policies in place to effectively address violence against women on campus. And we need to do the same thing in the workplace. One of the most interesting things I ever saw was a presentation by Southern Magazine, working in combination with the hairdressers, talking about understanding so that hairdressers would have would be able to recognize when their clients have been subject of abuse by the way their scalp may be hurt, or they need to bring their children with them, or they're worried about the cost of the haircut in a way that seems unusual, or they confide in their hairdresser. And it's interesting because what people need to do is to recognize that we want to have people living in safe homes and thriving in healthy relationships, but we need to address the problem and help prevent the problem.
That's amazing, Susie. That gives a whole new meaning to only her hairdresser knows. And rather prescient to think of addressing in that fashion. You mentioned earlier the issue of stalking. It's my understanding that in the last few years, stalking itself has increased rather dramatically. And we understand that we understand that, I guess, in a cultural way within the United States. Is that something that exists in the same fashion in the wider world?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think part of it is that the advent of different ways to be stalked. I mean, at this point, someone can be stalked simply by someone who's following them on Facebook. You know, people are putting in and over the internet. Abuse that has been described to me, for example, is someone who would call someone way too many times during a day to find out where they are and what you're doing. And I know I live in the state of Maryland. I'm very proud that in our state there was some terrific legislation that was passed in the last year that dealing with protective orders. When there would be temporary protective orders, making sure that we could address this problem.
And, of course, things that seem so foreign to us in the U.S. Are commonplace and everyday in the wider world. Taking as an example, it goes way, way back in human history and is something that we like to think as civilized human beings that we're getting away from, but it is still not only present but prevalent. The idea of women as property still has some standing in the world today, whether it be outright slavery or marriage as property transfer, that sort of thing. You mentioned the female genital mutilation. If we pass the International Violence Against Women Act, Susie, will the United States have the the will is the word I'm looking for, to go out and aggressively pursue this kind of conduct?
Well, I certainly would hope so. I actually can remember sitting in a room with then First Lady Hillary Clinton, her describing a trip that she took to Africa, and the first time she had heard some of the stories of the genital mutilation,
breathtaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it is breathtaking, and I could picture being in that room. So having someone who, for the past two decades at least, has seen these issues and has put a priority on them, really gives me great hope that should this bill be passed, it will be implemented by someone who certainly cares about these issues.
Well, Susie, I certainly applaud Jewish Women International and, by extension, the Interfaith Domestic Violence Coalition for taking a lead on this. Right now, as far as Workaday America is concerned, is it one of those call your congressman, call your senator sorts of situations, or is there more that people can do?
No, I think that would be a terrific thing. We urge people to go online to call your, particularly if you have members of Congress who are members of the Foreign Relations Committee, urge them to, on either the House or Senate, urge them to urge the leadership to pull up this bill, to get this out of committee, and to take action.
Well, I certainly know this is an activist-oriented audience on the Horn. It's we call what we do here activist radio. So I have no doubt that there will be a lot of letters going out to a lot of different congressmen and and senators as a result of this conversation. Again, I thank you very much, Susie, and I wish you well, and I hope at some point you'll be able to update us. So let me ask you just off the cuff, are you going to be at the conference in D.C., the Campaign for America's Future conference?
I'm not sure.
I understand.
I haven't missed it for a number of years, so most likely I'll be stopping by.
Well, if you are, stop by the table and say howdy. It'll be nice to see you again.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, take care, Susie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Susie Turnbull, chair of the Maryland Democratic Party, but in this instance, more particularly, a member of Jewish Women International, the group taking a big lead among the Interfaith Domestic Violence Coalition to see past the International Violence Against Women Act. I'd say this is, you know, this is worth your effort. This is worth a moment. This is worth your activist energies. We're talking again about H.R. 4594. And S-2982, call your senators, call your member of Congress, tell them you want this passed, tell them you want it out of committee, tell them you want it to you want it to be a meaningful part of our foreign policy. And why? Because simply being born female should not be a life sentence to abuse, to the horror and the fear and the pain of brutality. Brutality that can be eliminated with something as seemingly simple as education. Can you do that? I sure hope so. So we come to the end of our first hour this evening. This is, this is the Thursday edition of The Horn. And we'll go where you need to go, where, you know, the stuff that the burrs that are under my saddle and the bees that are under my bonnet will hit those too. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B. KINCAID at gmail.com. We will be back. Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way. Right here on Activist Radio, America's listener supported liberal voice, The Horn.
She belongs to your very best friend. freshest, clean feeling today with Oral B.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, June.
Just on the beat.
Time in a couple of days. I have some good news. We have just cut the riser pipe off the lower marine package.
Progress on cut and cap.
The time has come once and for all for this nation to fully embrace a clean energy future.
The president calls for a clean energy economy. Plus, oil reaches the beaches of Mississippi and Alabama, and dumb things people say about offshore drilling.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
Hey, billionaire BP CEO Tony Hayward, I bet those 11 dead rig workers, untold numbers of sea animals, and thousands upon thousands of people who have lost their livelihood on the Gulf would like their lives back, too. Hey, Tony, this is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored in part by Velvet Revolution's Stop the Chamber campaign, holding corporate criminals accountable. Please log on, sign in, and donate to StopTheChamber.com today. That's StopTheChamber.com. Okay, Desi Doyen, day 45 of the Gulf oil disaster. There seems to be no end in sight. We're hearing talk now that this gusher could go on through Christmas, depending on how things go.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Although Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen announced that they were successful this morning in the first step of the so-called cut and cap procedure.
The next step will be to put the containment cap over what's left of the riser pipe on the lower marine riser package and start seeing if we can move gas and oil up the pipe, hopefully to start flaring off gas and start production later on today.
But the cap will not be a tight fit, so some oil will continue to escape. Containing as much oil as possible is a good thing because right now it's estimated to be gushing at 33,000 gallons an hour, according to government estimates. Now, the only known permanent solution to stopping the gusher remains the drilling of those two relief wells, which can't be completed until early August. And those almost never work on the first try. The Ixtoc spill in 1979 required several tries and took 10 months, and that was only in 150 feet of water.
So that could lead us all the way through Christmas at this point if things don't go well with either the cut and cap or the next step, the relief wells.
Yes, and the relief wells are also risky. Now, if nothing works to contain the oil and it continues to flow unabated at current estimated rates by August, the total would be over 100 million gallons or only about 3 hours worth of fuel use in the United States.
And how many Exxon Valdez spills will that be?
10.
10 Exxon Valdez, and that's a conservative estimate.
Yep.
We also have to acknowledge that an America run solely on fossil fuels should not be the vision we have for our children and our grandchildren.
In an extraordinary speech at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh yesterday, President Obama used the BP oil disaster in the Gulf to call on the Senate to pass stalled clean energy legislation.
About time.
Pittsburgh, I want you to know, the votes may not be there right now, but I intend to find them in the coming months. I will continue to make the case for a clean energy future wherever and whenever I can. I will work with anyone to get this done, and we will get it done.
You know, we've been very hard on Obama and the administration and the Democrats for not using this opportunity to really push for clean energy legislation. And I got to say, in that speech yesterday, it was great to hear him fighting, speaking up. He sounded like he was fighting for health care legislation. So let's hope that he means it here as much as he did for health care insurance legislation.
And the White House says that the real fight for clean energy legislation will begin after Wall Street financial reform legislation is passed.
Well, that's fine, but I'm glad to hear Obama speaking up about it. Heard Barbara Boxer speaking up about it. Every damn Democrat in the Senate and the House ought to be speaking about it every day.
In his speech, the president also pushed for ending billions in federal subsidies to the oil and gas industries. It's one of the most profitable industries in the world. Now contrast the president's speech with de facto Republican Party leader Sarah Palin.
Drill, baby, drill!
Of course, she had to weigh in. In a bizarre and truly Orwellian post on Facebook, Palin blamed the oil disaster on environmentalists, saying that extreme greenies forced oil companies to drill farther and farther offshore. And she tried to rewrite history at the same time, pretending that her drill, baby, drill catchphrase meant only onshore drilling.
It had nothing to do with offshore drilling, except for these comments.
And we will safely drill for the billions of barrels of oil that are warehoused underground, including our offshore sources. We will safely drill for the billions of barrels of oil that we have underground, including offshore. Drill, baby, drill. That's right. It also means safely
Safely tapping into our offshore sources, safely, environmentally safe.
I'm a supporter of offshore drilling.
Unbelievable. Her tweet said, do you get it now, extreme greenies? As if she never mentioned offshore drilling at all.
And it's as if they don't realize that, you know, we have this stuff on video. We can go back.
We have the internets, and you can read about it on the internets at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. You can also follow us on the internets on the Twitter. You can download us on the iTunes, and you can listen to us on your mobile device on the Stitcher Radio. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's so good to go back in time.
Now, media, try to get this right, okay?
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. This is the Horn Thursday Night Edition. God. You know, Brad, Desi, I love you. I love you, I do. But we've more or less retired Mussolini here at the Horn because it gets to a point where just the mere sound of her shrieky, screechy, revolting, little ignorant Moran voice that just sends me into paroxysms of pain. Take it easy on a guy, will you? Please? That's enough Sarah for a while. I know I speak for all of us when I say that. Tell you what, let's go back to the phones. Let's see, first-time caller John on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's great to talk to you. Yeah, long-time Horn Nation listener. And first time I've gotten up the courage to call, actually. So.
And you're still alive.
Yeah, it's going okay so far, so no worries. But, yeah, I'm calling. I'm in Binghamton, New York now. I'm originally native Texan, Upper Texas Gulf Coast. So, I mean, I don't really have much to add about the BP spill. You've done a really great job of covering it. I wanted really to call in, and I hope it's not too big of a break from how the show's been so far.
There's no such thing here. You can go anywhere you want to go. You know that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I've been watching this this Frontline documentary, and I wanted to just put it out there for the Horn family because it's terrifying and horrifying and just everything a good doc should be. It's called Flying Cheap, and it originally aired, I think, earlier this year, but it's about the Continental Airlines Flight 3407 crash in Buffalo, New York last year. Do you recall that at all?
I do, because I think it was like a week or so later I was due to fly on the same kind of aircraft, and I had the I had the blind shivers over it.
Yeah, I bet. It was also about a week before the Hudson crash, where Captain Sully, the good, you know, very experienced Union pilot, basically saved all those folks. But this was it was a commuter air crash, and it crashed in Buffalo, New York, into a house, killed all 49 on the plane and one on the ground. And this Frontline doc, Flying Cheap, is sort of an investigation of where the air industry is and how problems in the industry led to this crash, because it wasn't actually flown by Continental. It was flown by this outfit called Colgan Air, which is one of these regional commuters.
Well, see, that's one of the reasons that I was having a fit, John, is because I was flying Colgan Air a week after.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, of course.
White knuckles, teeth clenched. Yeah, exactly. And in fact, I love the way things work around here. You've mentioned this thing, flying cheap, and I'm already seeing messaging saying it's a stunning, stunning piece of journalism.
Oh, excellent. Oh, so it's already out there. That's great. Yeah, it aired a while back, but I'm just catching it now. I'm in the time machine with pretty much everything, you know. But it's just, you know, what they pay these pilots is terrible. How they work them is terrible. And there's just, it all goes back to the airline industry deregulation starting in the 70s and brought to a head under Reagan, of course. And the thing is, it's one thing to talk about deregulation in an industry or corporate profits over other people's security in an industry where when you mess up, it's, you know, you make a bad burger or something. But, you know, these are 49 people's lives in these pilots' hands. And, you know, they were doing their best to make ends meet, of course, I'm sure. But, you know, this is a tragedy, and it ended up killing 50 people because pilots weren't trained. They were overworked. They were paid terribly, and this doc goes into it. It talks about, you know, pilots for some of these commuter lines making $22,000 a year. You know, that's unbelievable. I mean, what is that? That's incredible.
It's unconscionable, among other things. The fact of the matter is, there's not a single thing you can point to that has been a disaster of recent vintage in this country, whether it be coal mining or oil drilling, or meat packing, or food processing, and the air travel. The common thread that runs through all of that is the fact that deregulation is deadly.
Yes, it is. It is deadly, and it's more obvious in some cases, but it always is, whether it's to people or to the environment, like we're seeing down in the Gulf. I mean, you know, I mean that's not my main topic, I guess, but. But, Lord, I mean, you know, I grew up there, and you've talked really eloquently about your time down on the Gulf Coast, and it's been wonderful because that's missing from so much of the media. But yeah, it kills people, it kills lives, it kills the environment. And it's when are we going to realize the consequences of putting holy profit ahead of everyone's well-being?
That's the sticky wicket, I suppose, because it's clear to me that a lot of us in this country do realize that we do recognize that. And I think it's fair to say that that there are members of Congress who understand that. But the problem comes back to stuff like Citizens United and the pernicious effect of filthy, filthy corporate money on our political process. You know, there are. And it's this. I'm glad you brought it up because it's something that's sort of been banging around like a pair of marbles inside my brain. That's about all I got these days. And that is the fact that we have laws about, for instance, advocating the overthrow of the government, right?
Right.
You're not supposed to do that. You know, I can't get behind the microphones and, hypothetically speaking, scream to the barricades, you know, cast off your chains, workers of the world unite, revolution
right.
Now. You know, can't do that. You know, you can't say you want, well, unless you're a geometry teacher in Alabama, you can't go around telling people what angle to plot to put a bullet through the president's head. Okay?
Yeah.
But, on the other hand, corporate America can advocate for the overthrow of the government simply with deregulation and lots of money. There's no difference. The end result is the same. A government that no longer functions, in which the people who form the social contract that sets up the government wind up having the contract unilaterally breached against them. But on the one hand, there's punishment. On the other, there's reward.
Yeah, and it's a difference of degree, I think. I mean, you know, like you said, you can't go on and overthrow, you know, advocate overthrowing the government, kill your neighbors, which is fine because it's the people's airwaves. But this deregulation movement, it's death by a thousand cuts. It's let's take this out, let's take this out, let's take this out. Maybe no one will realize and the accumulated effect is great on people in the world.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, and the question is, is there an easy answer, i.e., let's get unions actively back into the back behind the sticks in the cockpit? You know, look at the difference between Sully Sullenberger and the guy that flew the plane into the house in Buffalo. One was union,
yeah.
One was non-union. One was well-paid, had retirement, health care. The other may have been a contractor. The fact of the matter is, the best descriptor that I've recently read is that some of these people, some of these folks on these little short-hop flights between small airports and hubs, like what I have to fly to get out of Charleston, West Virginia, these people behind the sticks, be they male or female, these pilots, are making roughly the same money as the manager at your local Taco Bell.
Absolutely, they are, and you know, you could be in a cockpit or in a cabin of one of those flights when the pilot and the first officer together have less than 1,000 hours of flight time on that aircraft, and that's incredible. I mean it puts you in absolute danger, and it's, you know, again, I don't want to necessarily, you know, attack these people because, you know, they've got to eat too, their families have got to eat, but when they're living 9 pilots in some crash pad in Albany that all work for one of these regional airlines and they're not union and they're paid by the hour, paid hourly, you know, it's incredibly dangerous and it's terrifying and it's horrible for the people because they're trying to do their work, you know, and they obviously don't want to crash an airplane, you know, but they just don't know any better. They can't sit in the right seat next to someone like Sully and learn what to do in the event of something like this. And it's important, I think, because it's an example of this deregulation and this profit motive really impacting on ordinary people's lives. Because like you said, you know, everybody flies these things. These regional commuters operate 52% of all flights in the U.S. So you're going to come across it, you know?
You can't get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the being in a way being educated is a start, but it doesn't really cure anything because the guy is still, you know, as I recounted in my story of my harrowing flight from Charleston out to Salt Lake City 2 weekends ago, daggum,
yeah.
They had to delay the flight and you know, my whole day was thrown into just misery and chaos. They had to delay the flight because the poor schlub who was flying that route between Atlanta and Charleston was so overworked that they literally, because of FAA regulations, had to delay the flight by an hour so the guy could get one more hour of sleep and be technically safe to fly.
Well, absolutely, and look at that. That's the big government stepping in and saying, hey, you know, let the guy sleep for another hour. You know, I mean, oh, wow, it looks like the socialist government, you know, stepping in. What are we going to do about that? What is Michelle Bachmann going to say about that, right?
Yeah, that's your communism.
Yeah, there you go. Right, I tell you what. Yeah, communism. Yeah, you might argue communism saves lives. Maybe not communism, but big government can save lives. Let's say that sometimes.
And you know, I sort of had to put out all that into perspective because I was miserable when I got to Salt Lake because I'd gone from Charleston to Atlanta, Atlanta to New York, and then almost completely across the country from New York to Salt Lake City. But you know, I arrived alive. And then you can't overestimate that, and you can't blame that. You know what you said. The guy wants a job. He's feeding the family. You hope.
Sure.
And yeah, I want him to have that extra hour of sleep. But I blame Delta because you know Delta forever has been the leading proponent of bust the union. When in fact, you know, the union is what is the union is what saved lives in the Sullenberger case, and the union is what saves lives in safety training that non-union folks don't get because in a non-union shop the only thing that matters is the dollar and not the safety of the flying public.
That's absolutely true. It's about the money. And again, just to steer back and really give a plug for this Flying Cheap documentary, you know, they talk about how when the big airlines contract out to these regional carriers, they pay them a flat rate per route. And so they can increase their profit by cutting things like salary and training and turnaround time. So, I mean, the connection is very obvious. You can see it. You know, it's right there. And just a real, real big recommendation to the Horn audience for this documentary.
Well, I'm gonna try to watch it myself. I assume it's online, and if it is, I'm gonna have a run.
Watch it online, pbs.org, Frontline. It's called Flying Cheap.
See, I have to be careful with what I do, though, John, because among other things, I sat down the other morning with Agnes. The kids were all gone to school, and it was all quiet. And I said, let's watch a movie, and I clicked on Food Inc. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No, I haven't. The book is on the shelf, you know.
Well, it's along the same line. It has the same tenor as what you're describing with the frontline piece. And I sat there, and we sat there watching it, and Agnes just looked at me and said, I hate you. I said, what? I hate you making me watch something like this first thing in the morning. You ought to know better. Because, among other things, one, it was pointing out, again, deregulation kills. It was pointing out the fact that, like, in the 1970s, the food, USDA had something like 2,000 or 3,000 or 7,000 food inspectors. And we're down to 200 now. And it's not because nobody wants to be food inspectors. It's because there has been a steady drive toward deregulation. You know, remember when we had E. coli in the peanut butter?
In the peanut butter, the spinach, the jalapenos, which hits me close to the heart. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, these are all things that don't defecate, not to be overtly gross, but they don't.
No.
And the only way you get E. coli is if you've got poo near them.
Yep.
And you can solve that with some regulation and some reasonable food safety laws, but where corporate predatory, the anarchic, so to speak, or Randy in America is concerned, regulation is bad because it gets in the way of dollar making.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, similarly, don't watch this in the morning, because watching this, I've gotten just deeper and deeper into the bourbon, and it would ruin your whole day. Well, trust me.
Well, here's a little secret just between us. I ain't letting Agnes nowhere near it, because we're flying out to do the whole Netroots Nation broadcasting gig in July, and she's not been on an aircraft, and neither have two of my three children. This I'll be watching by myself.
Yeah, I got you. Are you? Can you tell if it's one of these? Well, I guess you have to fly. You probably have a short hop until to Atlanta or somewhere like that. Right?
What we do is we blow out of Charleston at least. See, that's the thing. If you take, I forget if it's American or United, you'll get one of those Colgan flights aboard one of those heinous turboprop, rickety crop duster affairs, and it'll go to Charlotte, and that's just awful.
Right.
So, picking the lesser of evils, I usually choose Delta, even though it's crappy and non-union, but all the unions are busted on these things. You know, it's not like you're making a choice between a union flight and a non-union flight anymore. So what I do is I fly Delta, and it either goes to Atlanta or Cincinnati, and I at least get a real jet. These things are made by...
Yeah, once you get there.
No, well, I mean, out of Charleston, I get something. It's called a Canadair, Canadair.
Oh, Canadair, yeah.
And it's got.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this.
I think it's got passenger space for like 60 or 70 folks, and so get one of those to Cincinnati, and then in Cincinnati, because I am enough of a geek, John, I like to see what aircraft I'm flying, and I'm not real happy because I had to take the cheapest flight because of the way this is all being funded, but I'm going to be aboard an Airbus, and those things have had a habit of dropping out of the sky. I do like my Boeings much better.
Yeah, definitely. Although an Airbus saved my bacon coming out of Denver one time, because they can apparently fly in frigid conditions pretty well. At least that's what they told us, and we all felt better. So anyway, well, best of luck with that, regardless of what happens. And you know, it's going to be fine. It's safer than sitting in a bathtub. And I guess the response to that is, well, if I could take a bathtub to Las Vegas, I'd probably do it.
Well, exactly, and the thing, it's safer than sitting in a bathtub if you're sitting in a bathtub next to, I don't know, a live 440 wire.
Right, or at least if it's on the ground, yeah.
Thanks so much, John. I'm glad you called, and I hope you'll call again.
Oh, definitely will. Enjoyed it, and big props to the whole Horn Nation out there.
All right, thanks a lot. Take care.
All right, take care, Bob.
Bye now. And we will keep this rolling along. I believe we've got Jim here. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Okay. You know, your last caller, well spoken, death by a thousand cuts, and that's exactly what it is.
Very, very much so. You know, a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, and it's designed that way, Jim, because that way nobody really ever notices until the corpse is bleeding on the ground, is bled out on the ground.
Well, I've worked for the federal government since the late 70s, early 80s, and ever since Ronald Reagan came into office in 1981, the shibboleth was do more with less.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what everyone was told. The only agency that really was not heavily impacted by the Reagan cuts, of course, was DOD. And, of course, I'm a DOD employee, but I interacted with lots of other federal employees in the federal community and could see the anguish on their faces at the task that they were being required to do with dwindling manpower. When someone would retire, their position would not be filled. The functions of that job would be transferred to someone else until finally the person was so overburdened and overworked. And we're talking about food inspectors. We're talking about people who make the airway safe. We're talking about all of the individuals who are involved in the protection of the American citizen and other people who use these facilities. You know, we're talking about those people being attenuated and the risk increasing at the benefit of the corporations, who would, of course, get a lot more money because they didn't have to worry about those pesky, irritating inspectors whose jobs were to make food safe, air travel safe, all types of things safe, which federal agencies were designed to do. And this has been a great bête noir with me, a great black beast, and I really hate it.
And, you know, you've probably had more experience inside the belly of that beast than most of us combined. And, you know, as you describe it, you saw it happen, didn't you, Jim? You saw it, like you said, do more with less. Every year it got a little bit worse, right?
I had friends who worked for the EPA, for example. Now, there is a city, and we're jumping a bit here, but we're talking about protection of people. Now, there is one city, and I can't... If I'm mistaken, I'm sure one of your callers will correct me. I think it's called Mossburg, Pennsylvania. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. I may have the name wrong. Please forgive me if I do. But I happened this morning to watch Dr. Sanjay Gupta on CNN interview the people of this town. And in that town was co-located chemical plants. And these chemical plants were producing, as one of the byproducts of their industry, dioxin, one of the most dangerous combinations of chemicals known to man. Of course, dioxin we know as being labeled back in the Vietnam era as Agent Orange, as a defoliant that was used to sweep and clear, as the term was used to be used by the MACV, or Military Assistance Command in Vietnam, to defoliate jungles so they could get it to VC. And we saw the result of the use of dioxin and its effect upon the men who had to handle it and use it. But the EPA, in its present form, because of these cuts and deregulations and attenuation of staff, you've got the EPA not even responding properly to citizens who have formed groups to write to them.
Oh, Jim, you need to look no further than your own backyard to see the effect of that. For 8 long years, the beset citizens of the Coal River Valley there in western Raleigh and eastern Boone counties begged the EPA for action and told them and proved to them time after time after time that they were literally being poisoned to death by Massey Energy and other coal companies, you know, with sludge and coal waste. And leachage into groundwater, and because the Bush administration believed that the only good EPA was a dead EPA, it was nothing. It was nothing but dial tone, nothing but crickets. And that was not an accident.
No, it wasn't. It was a purposeful action to emasculate the EPA and to leave people in positions of authority within that agency, only those people who would cooperate with the offending industries. And even though they had doctors, they had men who were writing for science, as well as application, supporting the efforts of communities to say, look, the levels of dioxin here are X times greater than they should be, and we have people who are dying, people who are sick, people whose neurological systems have been destroyed, and every other element of the human body that dioxin and other chemicals can reach. We have in spite of the testimony of qualified physicians and qualified physicians who ranked among their peers, who are being ignored and being given these letters saying there is no concrete evidence and this person is not qualified to make this statement about that statement, all of a huge effort to undermine the efforts of the people simply to save their lives and to save their towns. And these companies allowed to continue to pollute and to ruin and to make uninhabitable certain areas. I mean, this particular town that Dr. Gupta was talking about on CNN, it's uninhabitable. It's almost like a miniature-type Chernobyl.
Exactly. And, look down toward Institute, West Virginia, Jim. I know you know where that is, just west of Charleston.
Yeah.
That's the last place on Earth. It's still okay to make and store methyl isocyanate, the chemical that killed Bhopal, India. It's still okay to threaten an entire region of hillbillies. It's okay. We're expendable. What earthly reason is there for having that in the middle of a reasonably densely populated area? There is none. That storage of that noxious, deadly chemical sits hard by a state university. The state of West Virginia's historically black university sits next to a tank of methyl isocyanate, for God's sakes.
A black university.
Yeah, West Virginia State.
Well, I understand how it's happened. I don't understand why it's happened. But I do know that pretty soon we're going to have to pay a very serious price. And it won't be the people who are the top executives of...
Never is.
Or whomever.
Well, Jim, given the experience that you did have inside government, how long? This is a long deregulatory march that many people say began with Reagan, and came into full toxic flower with George W. Bush. If you look at that, that's roughly 1981 to 2000 to December 2008. Considering that, how long would it take to put a reasonable regulatory structure and a healthy regulatory framework back into place? Is it the same time span or worse?
Well, the only thing I can say to that is Obama has 81 appointments that he has put forward ever since he took office that are involved in certain of these agencies, and these appointments have not been approved by the Senate. And the types of people he was trying to put into these positions would attempt to ameliorate some of these conditions. So there is such a an effort on the part of Senate Republicans and probably some Democrats not to approve these people because they don't want to rock the boat and to kill their geese that lay certain golden eggs only for the privileged few. So as far as the time frame is concerned, it would probably take, with concerted effort, with a cooperative Congress and a president who really said what he meant what he said, another 20 years. I mean, you're talking about something that took over almost 20 years to destroy the protective functions of the government. And they're not going to come back overnight. If you can't get 81 appointees approved in a year and a half since Obama's been president, that ought to give you at least some sliding scale as to how long it would take. It would, you know, to try to at least do something. But right now, the EPA and FDA and the other host of alphabet agencies that we have that are designed to make our food and water safe and our lives safe have been so emasculated by the people who want to drown government in a bathtub, like your friend government, no, not your friend, but your that son of a gun, Grover Norquist, and other people who believe in what he is saying. And when I listen to that idiot, Sarah Palin, try to backtrack over her tracks, and you've got so many people believing what she says is gospel. And, of course, these people vote, and they vote into power men who could stop some of this deregulation. That, it too, has to be factored into it. I mean, we have probably, in my opinion, particularly starting over the past 20 years with the new federalism under Reagan, one of the most brainwashed and uninformed electorate in the history of government. Now, that's hard for me to say, because on many occasions I've had to take an oath to defend that government and to support it. But I have to speak very plainly now, and I'm not contravening that oath. As a matter of fact, I am really supporting it. What I would like to see is action taken to restore that government that I was sworn to uphold and to defend, not the government of Ronald Reagan and his rich cronies and the successors of Ronald Reagan and their rich cronies, who could give a tinker's damn about anyone but themselves and their corporate greed and corporate aspirations. I mean, right now we have a cataclysm in the Gulf. And I'm looking at a website, and I'm jumping here, and I hope you don't mind.
Go ahead, yes.
At the University Corporation for Atmospheric Research. And they're talking about this oil explosion, this oil cataclysm in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, they are predicting by computer model, and this organization is based in Denver, Colorado. The number is 303-497-8611. Call that number, 303-497-8611. And they are predicting that this oil will move up the entire coast going past Florida by a certain period of time. In a couple of weeks, it's going to be on the Florida beaches. It will move up the entire eastern seaboard, and it will get up into around the Chesapeake Bay area, and then it is going to move east. That means it's going to be pushed further into our shores. And I would say by Christmas, the people in New York at Jamaica Bay, they're going to be seeing the results of this thing. And all the while, you've got British Petroleum and their mouthpieces telling you there's no such thing as any subterranean oil plume, when this subterranean oil plume cannot be measured in feet or meters, but by miles and kilometers in breadth, width, and depth. I mean, it's a huge underground mass of this stuff, and this plus those dispersants. And people seem to think, oh, well, as long as we put the dispersants in there, everything's going to be okay. Well, these dispersants are just as toxic as the oil.
Sure they are.
And they don't know what they're doing. But what I'm saying is it's going to be moving all the way up and will probably, I would say, by the end of the year, be in Nova Scotia. And it's not going to go out into the Atlantic, into the Gulf Stream. But you've got a Labrador current that's coming down that's going to keep that stuff locked into our shores, and it's going to be a disaster of the first magnitude. And they've had, what, 44, 45 days to try to cap this thing. And they get on the air and they show you on the internet what they're trying to do. And then you have the head of BP saying that he's so sorry that his life is not back to normal. And I just watched on CNN, I have this flounded off, some of the wildlife that's covered with oil that's still alive. And I had to avert my eyes. I really did. I mean, it is heartbreaking. It is gut-wrenching to see what was once a beautiful habitat for so many wonderful creatures that contribute not only to our own existence, but to the appearance of a beautiful world being destroyed by the inability or the lack of ability and the lack of planning on certain people who wanted to do something on the cheap. It really makes me very angry. And I've said this before, and I'm repeating myself, and I won't bore anybody else with it. But when I saw the wildlife, the pelicans and the ducks and the other creatures, the heart absolutely breaks.
Because we have a human conception, Jim, of innocence. And that wildlife is, nature can be a brutal place. Nature is an unforgiving place. But nature is also innocent.
It is. And, you know, these poor creatures, these creatures are innocent. They've only come to do what they're supposed to do, to nest and to reproduce. That entire cycle has been stopped dead cold. And I don't know if we're going to see it again. I really don't. Except in museums, and the creatures will be stuffed, or the result of
But the thing is, we are fast approaching. There are elements within this, Jim, that, and it's hard to even contemplate or talk about. There are elements within this, Jim, that there may not be anything to see in museums because there may not be anything to maintain museums or go to museums. We are literally at a point where we are screwing with the ability of the fairly short-lived little human species experiment in natural selection to live on the planet.
You're right, Bob. I hate to agree with you, but you certainly are right. And this is one thing that is, I don't know how many times worse than the Exxon Valdez. And when I think of what they could have done if they had been more... if they had treated this whole situation with greater alacrity to try to clean this thing up and try to reach a reasonable solution that would cap this well and stop it and not just take measures that would enable it to keep producing. I mean...
Well, Jim, I guess one of the things I'm getting at is that even we have to be careful even in the discussion of how we go about trying to provide a remedy to this corporate horror. Because when we focus on one to the exclusion of others, we make it more likely that the others will bite us in the ass somewhere along the way. That's why I brought up, in the context of the stuff going on in the Gulf, that's why I brought up the Gauley River, okay? Because it's well, you remember, because you're a little bit older than I.
And I know exactly what you're talking about. What you described when you were a boy,
and we're getting to remember how they used to talk about in the bad old days of the Cold War about how even if you weren't in the blast zone, the fallout would get you.
Right.
Well, the fallout's getting us. Only it's not the Russians and the Americans. It's the transnational corporations who are bombing us because the Gauley pours into the Kanawha, into the Ohio, into the Mississippi, into the Gulf. Gulf is the loop. And
exactly. And where do
there's nowhere to hide. There is nowhere to run. There is not a single stream left in the United States. Not one. That it is safe to eat the fish out of on a daily basis without extreme risk of mercury poisoning. You didn't do that, Jim. I didn't do that. Nobody in the Horn audience did that. Profiteers from corporate America did it. And if we don't hold them to account, we cannot call ourselves in any wise stewards of our progeny or lovers of our children.
or being worthy to inhabit this planet.
Bingo.
And I'll say one thing to your first interview, and I'd like to get back to that, and it's very simple. It really takes a man to hit a woman, doesn't it?
Ain't that the truth?
I'll tell you one thing. If I should ever witness anyone doing that, there will be one or two people, or two people going to the hospital or the morgue.
You and the guy doing it.
Exactly. I'll tell you a quick story and I'll let you go. After my father passed away, of course, my mother was alone, and when she would go to the doctor, my sister would go with her, or I would go with her. And I remember she had this dog that she loved dearly, and the dog kept jumping up on her and jumping up on her. And as people grow older, they bruise more easily. Well, after she had her physical, she was called into a separate room, and a newly hired medical tech there asked, I said, Mrs. Anderson, are relations between you and your husband normal? And my mother was totally incredulous, and she said, my husband's been dead 8 years. And it took at least 45 minutes of explanation that she had this dog that was jumping up on her causing these bruises.
Oh, my God.
So at least, you know, that was a good thing. I'm glad they did that because they wanted to.
At least it means that they were tuned into the issue.
Exactly.
And again, it's hard, you know, on the heels of that story, it's worth noting. And I didn't want to get into it when we had Susie on the line, but look at the statistics. The statistics do not lie, Jim. These places where they have family values. And they go to the evangelical churches every time the doors open. Well, those places have more divorces and more domestic violence than those heathen blue states by a long shot.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it at all. And they seem to think that, I guess, because maybe those particular religious denominations parrot and preach the superiority of men over women, and women are supposed to obey and to be, and I excuse the expression, as Paul McCartney put it, the niggers of the world.
Yeah. I think that was John Lennon, though, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yes.
Whichever one of the Beatles did it.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of Sir Paul, apparently I got a note earlier today, and you, as much as anyone, Jim, appreciate a good quip. Sir Paul was honored, I suppose, last night. He was given the Gershwin Award by the Library of Congress at the White House. And in accepting his reward, he wryly noted, after the last 8 years, it's good to have a president that knows what a library is. I was proud of him.
Well spoken, Sir Paul. Well spoken, Sir Paul, because we certainly haven't had one for an awfully long time. And while they call these places like the Reagan Presidential Library or the Bush Presidential Library, I mean, the only thing they could probably have in those institutions are, I don't know what they have, comic books.
Well, we do know that the Bush autobiography that's due out in November will go into the Bush Library, and I am told by informed sources that that book will have a scratch and snort segment.
Oh, dear God.
Sorry, couldn't resist, Jim. You know, you bring out the worst in me.
Did you hear what he said today?
Oh, yeah, that he would waterboard Khalid Sheikh Mohammed all over again?
And?
Because we wanted to do it to save lives.
And also he would reinvade Iraq. I mean, this man is so stupidly wooden and so woodenly stupid that he refuses to admit his mistakes and say, we could have gone another direction. You know, if he had even said that, I would have at least been able to get a modicum of sensibility, or I can't say respect, but their understanding. At least the idiot has sense enough to realize his mistakes. But not only does he continue to propound his errors, but defend them with his own type of senseless logic.
He does, and it's a pretzel logic, to be sure, Jim. But remember, you can haul your Shakespeare out when you're talking about Bush, because it's in Shakespeare that we hear, isn't it Falstaff who says, a hero dies but once, a coward dies a thousand deaths?
Exactly.
Well, that's what's going on in poor little former dim leader's brain. He has to keep justifying the torture. He has to keep justifying the murder. He has to keep justifying Abu Ghraib, because if he just once lets a chink appear in the armor, then the entire pathetic little house of cards that he collectively is comes completely undone, falls apart, collapses.
Well, I mean, the only other solution he would have would be to put a gun in his mouth and pull the trigger.
Yeah, that would be a solution, wouldn't it?
Even Hitler had sense enough to do that.
At long last. Jim, it's been a good conversation. Thank you very kindly, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Take care, sir, and you have a good program.
We'll sure try. Take care, Jim. Bye now. Jim calling from a couple of counties over. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita. How did you like my...
I've been married to Paul McCartney 3 times.
Pardon?
I said, I've been married to Paul McCartney 3 times.
Have you really?
Yeah.
This is
my dreams.
Oh, okay, yeah. How did you like my Paul McCartney? I thought it sounded more Ringo Starr, but... You know.
Well, did you hear about him singing Michelle to Michelle?
No. Oh.
And he said he might be the first man knocked out by the president. Yeah, I think they're gonna put it on PBS.
Well, I'm being told you can watch it online. I'm seeing that in the chat room right now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's on the White House website.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's my man. One of them.
Oh, so you were a McCartney. Okay. See, I always, over time I sort of gravitated more toward George, too.
Oh, I love George, yeah.
You know, that's a personality test. Who's your favorite Beatle?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you describe? I don't know.
Once you've asked somebody who's your favorite Beatle, you get an idea for what kind of person you're dealing with. You know, and the people who say Ringo, you just keep walking.
Well, you know what I like about Paul as far as personality, you know, he was always the one that was, you know, he wasn't like aloof, like, I don't mean they were aloof, I don't mean that, but he was like more of an outgoing person.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, by far.
And he loved the audience. You could tell he loved the audience.
And I'm a Beatle geek. I watched a Beatle documentary the other night.
Absolutely gorgeous, you know, too.
Can't comment.
Yeah, I dream about being married to him 3 different times. The first one was really a very unique experience.
Did it work out?
Oh, they all worked out.
Is that polygamy?
I wrote a little thing when I was in college, too, about marrying him, taking him away from Linda.
Yeah.
Because I had a teacher that was wanted us to write a little theme on when I'm 64. Is it 64 or 62? That song.
Yeah.
Will you still love me? Will you still need me when I'm 64?
Exactly. Yes.
Well, she wanted us all, and I was an adult, and I was in the class of all these 18 and 19 years old, just out, and I wasn't anywhere close to 64, but I was, way above them. And so it just came to me to write about me and Paul. And I got a bunch of stuff in there about David Duke and all, and it just came to me. And my teacher, I was afraid to turn it in, and my teacher was crazy about it.
Oh, yay.
But anyway, kudos to you and Jim. I totally agree, and you know, it breaks my heart, too, about the animals. And uncalled for, Bob.
Yeah, I know it seems mean, but I'm all for dipping Tony Hayward in crude oil. And just letting him flop on the sand for a while. And then cleaning him up.
Yeah, him wanting to get his little life.
Yeah, because, right. Because, you know, Kate sent me a note earlier today. Because she's having some connectivity problems, so she has to listen to the podcast and can't listen real time. I miss her notes, sort of straightening me up as I go. But she sent me a note earlier today about that business of cleaning up the animals, and you know, it seems noble and so forth. And, but she said, all the birds that are getting washed when they're released, where do people think they're going to go?
You know, I've wondered about that, too.
You know, the pelican, it's not one of those situations where the pelican looks at the osprey and says, hey, sister, this sucks. Let's go to let's go to northern Idaho for the summer.
Right.
No, because
their home.
Yeah, this is programmed in.
Mm-hmm.
And when you mess with habitat, you mess with life.
That's right. And you go... You're an invader, really.
Yeah. So,
because
you know, you clean
home.
You clean them up, you turn them loose, they go, they get covered in oil again. Thanks,
yeah.
Tony. No, really, I want to dip him in oil. I do. That's just me, but I do.
Yeah. They've got some protesters dressing up in oil cans.
Well, apparently,
all around the country.
Apparently, cranky people in New York City have decided that to... express themselves at BP stations. I saw a photograph earlier today of a...
That may be what it was, because it's all over the country.
A vandalized BP sign in New York City? Yeah.
Yeah, it was about BP, yeah. But, anyway, God bless them. I wanted to talk about our governor situation here. We've got running for governor?
Well, life has gotten real interesting in the Florida Republican Party. I know that, Juanita, just from watching the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm talking about the governor, and you know, a lot of people have talked about our Senate, but this is what we got running in the Republican Party is that guy, I got his name down here somewhere, that he's the big head of the... Columbus Hospitals, I believe that's it.
Okay. Not sure, but no, continue, please.
Yeah, I just, let me find, I wrote it, got his name down, so. Okay, his name is Rick Scott.
Oh, him. Oh,
yeah.
Columbia, what was known as Columbia HCA.
Right.
Yeah, he's an evil, I mean.
Oh, and when he first started running ads, he runs a lot of ads. He first started running ads. He looked so creepy, but he's gotten kind of groomed up. But he's saying that he said, we should not carelessly paint all healthcare billing mistakes as billing fraud. Now, Bill McCollum is running against him. And this is Bill McCollum. He was in the Congress. You know, he was one of the big ones on... impeaching Bill Clinton.
I remember him well.
One of the speakers. Well, our governor appointed him. No, he didn't appoint him, I don't think. Maybe he won. I don't know, but he's the attorney general.
Well, he's the guy that spent all that money hiring George Reekers.
For what?
Remember Reekers, the guy that was caught with the rent boy?
Oh!
Well, McCollum spent tons and tons of Florida taxpayer dollars... hiring Reekers as an expert witness to make sure that gay folks couldn't adopt a baby.
Oh, yeah, he got his way. But he is now, he's also still in the running to get rid of health care. Bill McCollum is. And guess who's flouting him?
I can't wait to hear.
Jeb Bush.
Of course.
His good friend.
Is there a prayer of any kind of a Democrat getting elected governor?
Well, that's what I'm going to say. The only one I know about is this lady named Alex Sink, and her husband ran for governor against Bush the last time he ran. And I don't know why she doesn't go by that last name. I don't know. And I don't think in Florida there's too many people that's going to vote for a woman. So I don't know. This is what we're stuck with.
That's disturbing because neither McCollum nor other goober.
Rick Scott.
Neither of them have any, you know, Florida's got real live, honest to goodness, no kidding about it, economic problems. You know, there's trouble in River City, and it starts with T, you know?
Okay, now Rick Scott has got to say it. He said that McCollum is against the Arizona law, you know, stopping people. But he said, I get to be governor. We're going to vote that in.
We're going to have us a law just like that, only meaner.
You know, and it's like, where are the people?
Cuban community going to love him.
I wonder what, I think that Guy James is familiar with Alex Sink, but I wonder what he thinks about her. Because I would love to know what he thinks about her.
I don't know. I'll have to shoot him a note and find out and just get the skinny and maybe report back.
But my God, we did have a lady from close to here that's been in public for a long time. I don't know what she is, some kind of congresswoman, but she's kind of one of these prominent, I guess, social people or whatever. And she was running in the Republicans, but she dropped out because she wasn't hardly getting any support. She might have been getting maybe 10% support, so she dropped out. So I think about among the three, what I know of them, I think I would have rather had her. But I just don't know, Bob. I mean, this is really weird.
Well,
But imagine having either one of these guys.
Well, that's the whole point. You know, I don't care if it's the one who dropped out or him. You're dealing with poison across the board.
Right. Absolutely. Let me see. Oh, yeah, they arrested, actually took him in yesterday, a big Republican guy down here who's in charge of the Republican Party in the state, and they're still investigating that outfit. But he spent a lot of money on these big meals and big deals and all that kind of stuff. He spent a lot of their money. So he's definitely been arrested and taken in with a perp walk, you know. So the Republicans, I mean, are just going crazy. And you heard about the governor of Arizona?
Declaring that her daddy died fighting the Nazis?
Yeah.
I wonder where he was fighting him, because he died 10 years after World War II.
Yeah, she's saying now that he died from the fumes. He worked in a munitions place. But she's...
Wait, he wasn't even in the military?
I don't think so. She didn't say that.
Well, I guess my mama died fighting the Nazis, too.
Well, mine did, too.
Because
your mother work in the
plant? My mother worked in a munitions plant on the eastern shore of Maryland all through the Second World War. You know, we had a running gag in the house. Mama made bullets in Baltimore.
Well, my mother, she cleaned the gunnery in planes. You know, when they come back to be redid, she worked on the gunnery.
Well, your mama and my mama, they died fighting the Nazis.
Yeah, how about that? But, you know, I mean, and then that guy in the, I forget where it is, you know, they're talking about the Democrat, you know, talking about his Vietnam. Well, this other guy was supposed to get some kind of award. It was actually the group he was in that got the award. And he's Republican. And did you hear about...
Yeah, that's Kirk in Illinois.
Okay. Well, did you hear about the muscle mouse from Utah?
Oh, no.
Oh, you know.
Who? Hatch?
Yeah.
What now?
Well, you know, he before this happened, he was wanting to have a law, you know, where anybody that misrepresented.
Oh, right, yeah, because he's going to get that Democrat from Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of a sudden he's not so crazy about his,
He changed his mind on this guy. Of course, that's, you know why that is, because he's a Republican.
I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
Right, absolutely. But,
you know, I'd love to have a tenth of Flush Flemball's audience, only, you know, sane people, and get a we ought to have a fund out there to just send a box of IOKIYAR t-shirts to to whatever Republican does the IOKIYAR thing of the week. Wouldn't that be delightful?
That would. That's a good idea, Bob.
Just white t-shirt, bold black letters, IOKIYAR.
Oh, my sympathy went out to you yesterday. You were talking about being so hot.
No, and it is again tonight. I'll be.
And it's H-O-double-T hot down here.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Little rain.
I should complain. You got, well, did you get your tomatoes out, Juanita?
Oh, me and my garden, I'll tell you. I've got a beautiful tomato plant, and that's about it. My little seeds, they died on me, and I don't know. I just don't know, Bob.
I don't think you're living some. I don't think you're living somewhere that you're supposed to be growing stuff.
Maybe not, but other people do. You know, I don't know. Maybe I've lost my green thumb. I used to have one, but anyway, I just I get behind. But I have in my place. I've got this one. I had this one window air conditioner, and it gave out on me. Because it was the only cool room inside, you know. But I found one for like $100 at Lowe's.
Mm-hmm.
It's working out pretty good.
Well, I'm gonna. I gotta find one. I gotta find one for the studio. That's the.
How big is your studio?
Oh, it's actually two rooms, and the only room I can get, the only window I can get an air conditioner in is about 12 feet behind me.
Can you cut a hole in the wall?
Not really. Because I've got these great big glass sliding, horizontally sliding windows, and it's a real pain.
I bet.
So I, you know, somewhere
you do have a problem.
Well, yeah, and the studio faces south, so I get lots of. Oh, this is a naturally, it's a warm room even in winter. It's not a bad thing, but in summer it gets brutal. But, you know, like I should complain. I'm not the one in Florida. You are.
You know. Well, at least I can get in a room that's cool.
Yeah, and Ron from Raleigh writing in about what we're talking about. He says, the election in Florida, Bob, isn't that where they give you a ballot and a gun with a single bullet? no choice at all. Juanita, it's awful.
That is no choice, really. I hope that, I mean...
Well, when do y'all have your... When's your primary, for heaven's sakes?
August.
Oh, you got to put up with this all the way to August, you poor thing.
But they're trying to... there's some other stuff that McCollum has done. They're trying to get investigated. But
well, McCollum may wind up in jail before this is all done.
Well, that'd be fine with me. I just hope he don't wind up in the governor's office. But,
well, you know what? You can perp walk out of a governor's office as well as the attorney general. So,
That'd be great. Jeb Bush is, you know, his good friend. He's going to do away with Obama health care.
Yeah, that Obamacare that's killing America.
Yeah. Well, and who was the first guy that called, John?
John. New caller.
Yeah. Call again, John. Enjoyed listening to you.
Well, thank you, Juanita. That's real neighborly of you.
Okay, well, you have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Juanita.
Night-night.
Bye now. You know, I'd like to read the paper about Paul McCartney and when I'm 64. Hopefully Juanita's got it sitting around somewhere and she can send it on to me. I'd like to see that. Juanita is a whole lot of talents hidden under a bushel, if you know what the Bible verse means. You never know. She's just a treasure in a treasure trove. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
Apparently so.
Oh, hi, Bob. This is Sparky.
Hey, Sparky. What's up, brother?
I thought I'd give you a geek report.
Okay.
Do you remember the movie Silent Running with Bruce Dern?
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you've thought about that this week, but did you get my email the other day on Oceaneering?
Yes.
That's the company that makes all these bots that are robots that are down underneath the water right now working.
Mm-hmm.
There are six ships out there with two robots per ship right now working on this thing. And they're getting on one of the feeds, ROV2, they're getting ready to put the top cap or whatever it is now. Lottie and I have been talking about this on Skype for weeks. But these robots run on 480 volts underneath the surface. And they're our only hope, you know, to cap this thing.
Yeah, and frankly, everything that I'm reading now says that even if they cap it, it's still not going to be stopped.
But what they've got right now looks like a... It's hard to say. Look, I can't describe it, but they've got solenoid valves on the top of it, and they've got these actuators. Have you seen where they cut the top of the pipe off?
Yeah.
It's right above a flange.
Yeah.
There's a flange on the pipe. Well, it looks like they're going to stick this thing over the top, and then they're going to energize these actuators and hook all these hooks that are coming off the top cap thing underneath the flange, and they've got cables going to it, and they're heating it so they don't get the ice effect this time. And then they're putting some kind of chemical down there too, through some valves on the damn thing.
And hope it works, but so far the track record is not the best in the world. You'll have to admit.
No, but I mean, these little bots are the only thing you got to pray for. I mean, that's the only hope. Nothing else can work down there. And there's...
Well, the one thing they haven't done yet is blow up the hole.
Yeah,
and I'm not one of the...
You got to put the bomb in there.
You
know what I mean? They're the only ones that can do anything down there.
Well, and isn't that just astonishing, Sparky? The simple fact that Grover Norquist got his dream. The government is small enough to drown in a bathtub now,
mm-hmm.
and you know it's because of that we have a hole in the seafloor that's 5 miles deep. You know, a mile down to the seafloor, and then 5 miles under the seafloor into that oil reserve. We had the technology to get into it, but not to do anything about it if it broke loose. You know, and we have the Republican deregulatory dream come true to thank for it. That's the long and the short of it. It really is.
Mm-hmm. I heard today, I saw a video today with Mike Papantonio.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about how the Russians blew up that gas well. In the 60s, they drilled a parallel hole, and then they put a tactical nuke down there and set it off. But who knows how long that would take.
That's the whole thing. It all takes time that should have been spent before the first bit took the first bite of seafloor, of seabed. And, you know, BP says, we'll pay for it. We'll pay all legitimate claims. That's not the point. This is, that's like saying, now that all the horses are gone, we will gladly close the barn door. And if they actually think that is somehow acceptable, it's worse. Their minds are worse off than I thought, Sparky.
Did you see actually what happened after the rig sunk? What it did to the pipe from the top of the blow-off preventer?
Yeah, it made it wrecked it.
Well, it laid over to the side, and they took the big cutter the other day, and cut down on the pipe. They cut it off about 6 feet from the top of the blowout preventer. Remember the view they were giving you where they were doing the mud shot and the top?
Yeah,
cap?
Yeah.
And that was the pipe at the top of the blowout preventer, and they cut that off now. And right at the top of the blowout preventer, there's I don't know how many inches of pipe sticking up, and this where they're going to stick this top cap up over. But that's the only leak right now, and it's coming out more heavy than it was before because it was pinched off at the top where it bent over, and then it was leaking out. Where the other leak they showed was at the end of the pipe that broke off from the horizon where it was laying on the seabed, as far as I can figure out. And I think Lottie will agree with me. Because we've been watching this thing for days.
No, I know. You guys have been absolutely glued to the screen from what I could see in the chat room.
We're like geeks.
Well, yeah, but
trying to figure out what it is they're doing.
Well, you want to watch this thing and you want to you want to see that something is happening. I understand that. I remember when the first Gulf War broke out, and I was so horrified by everything that we were doing. And I just sat slack-jawed staring at CNN going, what the hell are we doing? What the hell are we doing? And this is, in many ways, this is that same thing all over again. We are impotent in our ability to deal with the situation, and we hope just by... It's almost like we're collectively trying to will the thing to work. And I just hope that kind of thing helps. Hey Sparky, we're all stacked up. Good to hear from you, brother.
Yeah, well, just keep in mind the guys that are running these robots on that ship. How many hours a day they're working, trying to make this thing work.
Indeed, I hope they're union guys. There's a better chance of it.
Well paid. I know that.
There's a better chance of it actually working if they are union guys. All right,
okay,
Sparky,
Bob.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
You had that lady guest on earlier tonight there, and I'm emailing my two senators, Senator Gregg and Shaheen up here in New Hampshire, about S-2982, the IVAW, the International Violence Against Women Act or Law. And but what happened, it brought the whole thing to a fore is... talk about a woman who's been through hell, and this going back, she's been under house arrest basically for 20 years, the democratically elected leader of Burma, it's now called Myanmar by the military junta.
Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yeah, Aung San Suu Kyi, she was elected on May 27th, 1990 by 85% of the real honest democratic vote there, nothing like Ohio 2004 or Florida 2000, real honest vote count, international observers, all of that. But Senator Gregg, along with the bipartisan senators, they released the thing on the a statement about the on the 20th anniversary of the last general election in Burma. 20 years ago today, the people of Burma bravely sought to exercise the universal human right to elect a government of their own choosing. Again, at least my own words, unlike Ohio 2004 and Florida 2000, etc., and handed a landslide victory to their country's new major opposition party, the National League for Democracy, led by Aung San Suu Kyi. Rather than honoring the democratic will of the people of Burma, as it had promised, however, the ruling military junta refused to surrender power and instead launched a campaign of repression that continues to this day, and that continues with the latest election laws. They're not allowing Aung San Suu Kyi to run again for elective office there. They're splitting up the National League for Democracy. They're trying to destroy it. And Senator Gregg and Senator Feinstein of California, the Lieberman of Connecticut, they're asking that they want to get behind the Section 5 of the 2008 to ask the president to force the Burmese junta to support Section 5 of the 2008 Tom Lantos Block Burmese Aid Jade Act to impose targeted banking sanction against the regime and its leaders. And then they went off from there, but they also were using it. They went further with their rhetoric against Barack Obama, for God's sakes, and as if he doesn't have enough to deal with at this time, and this woman sat for another 8 years under George W. Bush, that stalwart leader of democracy there. You talk about, in this woman's rights bill build their, I believe in it. It's a no-brainer, like you said, Bob, for to stop the torture. It's personified by Aung San Suu Kyi and what this woman has gone through for her own Burmese democracy and Burmese people there. But the fact is that, you know, it's been more like 28 or 30 years now since Ronald Reagan took office in January 1981, and he started by, like your earlier calls were talking about, he fired the PATCO air controllers early in 81 there, et cetera, et cetera. And we now have the Republican wet dream, like you're just saying. But the fact is, the real ally could have been is this great woman leader there in Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi, but they're using it again for the rhetoric against Barack Obama, when the fact is, going back to with their phony, feckless sanctions for 8 full years on the George W. Bush, the main military, the main cash cow for the military junta in Burma, those bastards, is Condi Rice's own Chevron Oil and Gas Corporation.
Hello, yeah.
One of the biggest backers of the Burmese military junta. It's so, and I don't know if Barack Obama liking this Gulf thing, and whether he really has enough power to really stop these bastards with their continuing to fund the Burmese militarists there. The fact remains, and we are all interrelated. It's like you're saying there too. Talking about I got my Rand McNally map there about the rivers you're talking about. You live, you're near Charleston and Boone County and West Virginia?
Yeah, Charleston. I'm 50 miles east of Charleston. That's the state capital.
Okay, you're towards Nicholas County or the north? No.
Yeah, I'm between Nicholas County, Nicholas County and Kanawha County.
Okay, Kanawha. I see that right there. And there's a Kanawha River or something.
Yeah, Kanawha.
Kanawha.
That's okay. We'll teach you to speak hillbilly yet, Brian.
Okay. But and also, you're talking about that deadly toxic stuff that comes from Bhopal. They're still using, and that near that black university there, West Virginia State University. I can see that's near Tornado and West Virginia and South
right.
Charleston.
Right, Institute. It's located at Institute, yeah. West Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe I got it. Maybe I have it mixed up with another one. Okay. But I'm just going over you're going into the. Linked in the Ohio River, and that goes down, like you say, in the Mississippi River there. And if you want, we all need a little bit of escapism there. I got to admit, talk about one of the most underrated Frank Sinatra movie to me too is Some Came Running. It's based on the James Jones novel there about the Korean War era or late 40s era.
Yeah, because they had so much success with. The James Jones World War II novel that they did
From Here to Eternity.
From Here to Eternity.
Okay,
that was Sinatra, and then they made, Some Came Running. Yeah.
It's an underrated movie, but Shirley MacLaine kind of steals the part there in this, but in the, it's set on the Ohio River there. The opening scene there where he's just gotten out of the army, the young soldier Sinatra they're riding the bus into Parkman, the fictitious town of Parkman, Indiana. It was actually filmed at the town of Madison, Indiana, a very historical city there on the Ohio River, I believe it is, in Indiana. And the fact is, at the closing scene of that movie there, I know that there's some weak points of that movie. Vincent Minnelli directed, beautifully photographed it. There's some more corny scenes. Of course, they cleaned up a lot of the language from the James Jones novel itself. But and it goes on. But the closing ending there with Dean Martin and at the cemetery scene there with the Ohio River, it's one of the most powerful movie endings where Shirley MacLaine's character it has a tragic ending, but it has a powerful ending there too. It just people could see you could see the beauty of what you were just saying, the Ohio River Valley and the Ohio River there. I thought at first it was the Wabash River because I always think of that first when I think of Indiana. But I guess it's the Ohio River where Madison is located. That's where they filmed this. And but the fact that it all flows down into the Mississippi, right into that Gulf of Mexico, it's all so interconnected there. We are such an interconnected planet there. The woman's rights issue is connected to the people of Burma and this great lady there. She lost her husband there, Oxford educated, like herself there. He died while she was still under house arrest. Her two sons are still living in England. They can't even go to visit the poor woman there. And she's a great beacon of democracy. And it becomes, in Asian countries too, I think there's something, in places like the Philippines and all that too, you had Corazon Aquino and the other, but there still can be too much of it in the authoritarian Asian countries there. There's still too much of a male-dominating patriarchal society there too as well. It's the same sickness that you just were alluding to with the great guest there, that lady there, about the woman's rights law. And people that are, I believe Senator Gregg, maybe Senator Shaheen is on the Foreign Relations Committee there, my New Hampshire senator here, but even if your senator or your congressperson is not on a Foreign Relations Committee with in either the Congress or the Senate, still email them about this law there for rights for women. That's the kind of thing it's absolutely tied to the Iraq War too. The secular government of Saddam Hussein, as much of a bastard as he was, women were lawyers. 80% of the lawyers in Iraq at that time were women. They were going to university. They were not hassled by religious police the way they are now with the Shiite Islamic nuts and the Sunni Al-Qaeda in Iraq Islamic extremists. Now women are much more enslaved in the so-called post-Saddam era, the so-called liberated Iraq today, and all the so-called, you know, the surge, all it did was increase the ethnic cleansing there and the bribery of the local former Sunni militias, and the Shia took over vast neighborhoods in Baghdad, et cetera. But that's all interrelated with the brutality of war increases the chances that women are going to be brutalized as well, of course, and their rights taken away. It's disgusting. Just like you were saying, I just hope people can get after their senators about that. But even if they're not on the Foreign Relations Committee, that they keep that in mind when you, if you really just make a heartful, and keep it to the point. Don't be verbose like Brian. Like, just keep it to the point about that women's rights are absolutely, it's again what we were alluding to, the Mother Earth is angry right now with what's going on in the Gulf. And the fact is we need to become much more of that kind of nurturing society of towards our own Mother Earth, like the Native Americans there. And those guys, I believe, you know, it's not just in the John Wayne movies that, you know, the finest cavalry in the world and all that, that the Lakota Sioux and all the other Native American tribes, they were very brave men too, real men but they believed in Mother Earth and that kind of a sense of things there, and that's what.
Well, we do have now. This has been mentioned a couple of times on the show by not just by you, Brian, but by others. We do have to be careful with this overly broad generalization that the native peoples of this continent.
Were caused pollution too.
They caused pollution. They collapsed. They repeated, especially down in Mexico and Central America. They repeatedly collapsed their own society in object lessons for us today. The Mayan people collapsed their own society.
Mayans did. I thought the Aztecs were more.
The Aztecs got taken. Well, not really. The Mexica. That's what they really were. Not Aztecs. That's a word that the Spaniards foisted upon those peoples. The Mexica were just flat out taken down by the Spaniards. But the Aztecs, the Maya deforested and ruined their own, deforested their hillsides, ruined their water, caused their own massive erosion, and basically caused the collapse of their own civilization. You know, as did, of course, the people on so-called Easter Island, the Rapa Nui. Again, they did that,
the
you know.
The last tree that was taken down there, what was he thinking? As it came down, yeah. Easter Island, you're right about that. No, even native peoples there, we are by far the most destructive species towards this planet, and we will be the end of this planet, possibly. We probably will be out survived certainly by the German cockroach and by many insectoid forms of life, insect and perhaps a few plants.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. That's what it feels like, Brian. We're kind of looking over at the cockroach going, well, get ready. It's going to be your turn in a minute.
That's right. There's a lady that wrote a great book there. This was back in the late 1990s there. Her name is Penny something. She's an activist in New York State there, towards Albany, that area. She wrote a book about an intelligent cockroach named Bob, and came after the post. She foresaw the oncoming George W. Bush regime and the fascism that's followed and the profiteers, and you know that started, of course, with Ronald Reagan and all that. But this intelligent cockroach actually has more of a caring attitude towards the earth. By human standards, of course, he's a cockroach. He's still a slob and an icky, gross kind of a
yeah.
being or creature, but it's still he's much more organic than we humans are. We're so afraid of, we want to have chemicals and like those dispersants there down in the Gulf that one of your callers just talking about, that they're causing perhaps more toxicity and more sickness to the poor workers down there than the oil itself. You know, and that's where we're trying to. We want to be so clean, so free of germs, so free of. But germs are life forms. The first life forms on this planet, I believe, were single cell germs, basically, right? Bacteria or
Single celled organisms, right?
Organisms, yeah. And so, but just that, that organic thing. But there could be at times massive pollution. I've heard stories about in the Seminole history too. But they had a great love of the Everglades in that area now too. They must be disgusted that those them talking about Burma were being interconnected. All these nuts that buy these exotic Burmese pythons as pets, and now they've let them loose in the Florida Everglades. There could be a couple of 100,000 of them there that are killing off the poor alligators.
Yeah, they'll breed. They'll breed. Hey, Brian, I got to roll, buddy. Okay. But thank you very much, and we will talk soon, I hope.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, later, Brian. Bye-bye. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
What a compendium of knowledge Brian is, I tell you what. And you know, packs a boatload into a phone call, without a doubt. Let me do something real quick. I got a couple more blinking lights, and I promise you I'm going to get to them. You know what? I am told that Malloy is away from the microphone tonight, so if we run over by a little bit, you know, that's okay. So I will get to every blinking light if you want to light them up. You know the number. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. A couple of things have just come rolling into me that bear mentioning. First of all, and I posted the link in the chat room already, if you're not in the chat room for whatever reason, I hate seeing stuff like this in the middle of a show because it just makes me want to close the microphone, go over into a corner, and just pull up into a little fetal ball and weep. There is an AP photographer named Charles Riddell. AP photographer Charles. And he has gotten through the BP maze of obfuscation and intimidation. And he has pictures. Oh, sweet Jesus, he has pictures. He has pictures of wildlife, birds. He has pictures of birds that have been affected by that massive spill of corporate avarice that is washing up on the shores of the Gulf now. He has pictures. And they're horrifying. Sickening. And I would love to sit here and present you with a well-reasoned, cogent argument born of logic and common sense that I so revere. But dear God, I've looked at these pictures and the only thing I can think is I want to see Tony Hayward looking just like those birds. That's not a call for anyone to do him any violence. I simply wish there was some level of real justice on this planet whereby Tony Hayward could really, and let's be clear, Tony Hayward and the entire BP board of directors could experience firsthand, not by looking at, talking about, or thinking about, or writing about, or communicating about, or having a meeting with the lawyers about, or the accounting department, or anything like that. First-hand, dipped-by-the-heel experience. And I know that that is mean of me, and I know that shows just what a miserable, awful human being I am in my own right, because I wouldn't want that done to me. But God, you want to see the pictures, the easiest way to do it is simply go to thinkprogress.org. It is right now, I do believe, the top post at Think Progress.
thinkprogress.org. Yeah, the pictures, it's titled, The Pictures BP Doesn't Want You to See. We talked about that at the beginning of the program, those contracts that BP had people sign before they could go out and work on the cleanup. You know, really, when your neighborhood is burning down and you're getting into the line of the bucket brigade, the first thing you think of is, let's make sure and have everybody sign a waiver promising they won't talk about this fire, its causes, or what they saw or what they heard. Yeah, it's the first thing you think of. When the river waters, the flood waters are rising, and you've got to go and get into that sandbag brigade to try to hold the waters back from your town, your family, your community, everything that is good and decent in your world, the first thing you think is, let's make sure that everybody in that sandbag brigade signs a waiver. No, it isn't. The right wing likes to blame trial lawyers. But this wasn't trial lawyers. This was BP's army of corporate lawyers who drafted a contract in excess of 22 articles to make sure no one talked about what they saw. And I know it marks me as a poor, poor human being. But see, I see these photographs because this is my country, this is your country, this is our country. And for nothing more than an insatiable desire for holy profit, our country is in the process of being ruined by a greed head. And there is no prison cell. There is no jail. There is no hangman's noose. No firing squad's rifle that is good enough for Tony Hayward. The only appropriate thing for Tony Hayward would be to be subjected to that to which he has subjected us, our progeny, and our wildlife. Our waters and our aquatic species. Ours! The United States of America! Ours! What do you think would be done with Tony Hayward if he had done this in some other country that wasn't us, the U.S.? We have no cause to feel superior about anything because we haven't done it. All that points to is our apathy. I'm sorry, I know it marks me as a poor human being, but I want to see a photograph of Tony Hayward looking just like these birds. I'm sorry if that upsets you or offends you. Jim took a look at the pictures and wrote in just now, just as bad as the photos of Dachau and Ravensbrück, ecological genocide. And it is. And it is. One other thing on the grim side of the continuum. Take a moment. Let's have a moment of silence here at 15 minutes before the hour. Let's have a moment of silence for Furkan Dogan. I'm looking at a photograph of Furkan Dogan from November 6, 2008. A very young man. A handsome young man. Wearing a white dress shirt and what looks to be a pale blue necktie, seated. In the foreground to the left, a spray of beautiful flowers. contrast that photograph of Furkan Dogan to the last time he was seen. The last time Furkan Dogan, American citizen, the last time Furkan Dogan was seen, he had 4 point-blank bullet holes in his head and one in his chest, courtesy of the State of Israel. Point-blank, 4 in the head, 1 in the chest. Anybody who knows anything about those kinds of wounds knows why those kinds of wounds are created. They are textbook. He wasn't killed. Furkan Dogan was executed by the IDF, unarmed and innocent, aboard the flotilla. Furkan Dogan had 4 point-blank rounds put in his head and 1 in his chest. His family is, of course, crushed. Furkan Dogan was born in Troy, New York, of Turkish parents. He was as American as you or I. And he is dead at the hands of the Israeli Defense Forces, executed gangland style, 4 in the head, 1 in the chest. 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 Make sure he's dead, dead, dead. His grieving father said, "I am hoping to be a father worthy of my son." 4 in the head, 1 in the chest. In a desperate attempt to remain so-called neutral, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said, "Protecting the welfare of American citizens is a fundamental responsibility of our government and one that we take very seriously. We are in constant contact with the Israeli government attempting to obtain more information about our citizens." Come on, Secretary Clinton, please, you're better than that. At least admit the ones who are, we think are still alive, at least admit what they are. They're hostages. They are victims of a hostage taking. No getting around it. Two other American citizens were also injured in the pirate attack. And the United States says, "Please, won't you tell us what's happened to our citizens, please?" And Israel. Israel, which could not exist without the tax dollars of you and me, thumbs its nose at the United States of America. It's just a fact. I don't like it. But it is a fact. My grandfather, my father, myself, you, me, we have all labored and paid taxes by the sweat of our brow and the fruit of our industry, and portions of that have gone to support a government that just executed one of our fellow citizens, a government that ran over poor Rachel Corey. When does the United States of America find enough courage to look at Israel and say, "Enough. No more. Don't do it ever again"? Sadly, the answer to that question is probably never. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, call in because I am tripping on those photos. Good night.
You saw them then, Sandra.
Well, it's just really, you know, it just made me feel sick, and it's just so horrible. I mean, those poor animals, they ain't, you know, they haven't done a thing. They're just existing on a planet like us. I mean, unbelievable. The pictures are horrible to see those poor animals trudging. I didn't even know what to say. I just am sort of...
Well, see, I want to take one. See, this thing's raised up a real ugly mean streak in me, Sandra, because I want to take one of them and hold it up to Haley Barbour and say, is this like toothpaste, asshole?
Yeah, oh, no. These people are... No, but they're foul. I mean, they're sociopaths. They surely don't give a F about animals. And, the government is just hiding and hiding and obfuscating, and it's just kind of like... Unfortunately for them and us, you can only hide. This shit just bubbles up. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they can't really hide. I just saw a satellite photo from a British satellite that, you know, the oil is all in the Florida fishing waters. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So they keep lying, but what are they doing? Because they can't. I mean, what is the strategy by just lying? Are they? Because it all comes to show. It all reveals itself.
Well, you know, the longer you lie, the longer the lawyers and the accountants have to work, Sandra.
Yeah, I understand that, but you know, the thing is I was reading that there's a law if they can find, you know, that it was intentional or negligence or whatever, that they can fine them up to like $4,000
a barrel. Yeah.
I mean, that would, there ain't enough money in the world to cover that. So is it all about trying to pretend that it's less oil? Is that what it's about?
It's about pretending it's less oil. It's about pretending the whole right-wing message machine is in full-on sweat condition alpha right now, Sandra.
And they are everything
up to and including that sleazy, smarmy, disgusting ad that BP has released that I ran earlier in the show. It's all part of it.
Yeah, but it's just, I just think that, I mean, I know we're in America, so I need to qualify it, but I mean, this shit is just bare. It's kind of, you know, I'm just sort of thinking there's not enough PR in the world to cover their asses on this one. Those photos right there, wow. I'm sorry. That's incredible. And anyone who sees that can't help but be not only traumatized, but, you know, just angry, straight up angry. I mean, how could you not be?
I'm infuriated. I'm past reason.
You know, and it makes me sick because, like you were saying earlier on, this whole exercise is a means for them to keep. I just heard some bitch talking about so we can resume production. I'm like, these motherfuckers are shameless.
Yes. Because that,
like,
because
what?
Again, I go back to what I've said before. They may have a lot of lawyers and accountants on this, but they've still got some who are happily sitting there punching in data day in and day out, trying to figure out a way to wring out another buck.
No, but I like how, you know, it's sort of a pattern with all the major stories like in the last decade. You know, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, now this is a real story. The real story is that these wells, these relief wells, maybe they might get it, maybe not. You know, they've had examples that, it's taken up to 10 months to actually hit one and never at this depth. So they keep talking about that, but as we get closer to it not working, I can't wait to hear the new spin. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's
already out there. Well, you know, they've been pitching this, we'll get this taken care of in August. How long now?
Yeah, but now that's been extended, though.
Yeah, it's December, isn't it?
Yeah, to Christmas. But now what I'm saying is we're hearing about the realities of these wells don't necessarily hit. That takes them oftentimes over and over to actually hit their mark. And they've never done, you know, one at this depth.
And they've never done one after the fact. I think that's critical to this analysis, Sandra.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. No, because every other person with any sense have one or two ready to go, don't they?
They are they're pre-drilled. It's part of the process. It's part of the regulatory scheme.
You can't start pumping till the relief wells are proven functional.
Yeah, no, no. And so, you know, it doesn't really make, you know, and they're saying this cap shit is still going to have, like, all sorts of oil leaking out. Is that the latest?
Yeah, dribbling and oozing and squirting and spraying.
So there is a real possibility that this is just Pandora's box. And it really won't end.
The lid ain't going back on. And the thing is, now all of this is designed to keep Tony Hayward from having to step forward and say, listen, sorry, can't be fixed. It's broke forever. Bye now. Because the minute he does that, then it is going to get ugly.
Well, the thing is, though, you know, I don't know what the time frame is, but we get, you know, more and more of these sort of picture spreads going, that's terrible. I don't know what politician or corporate leader can sustain this shit, because most people I know like nature. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've got TV channels devoted to it that we watch because we can't go see nature anymore.
Right. I'm just saying.
Do you remember? I'm sorry. This is one of those off-topic things, but, you know, we are of a certain age, Sandra. Do you remember Soylent Green, the movie?
Oh, yeah, Charlton Heston, of course.
Yeah, remember the scene, and it was kind of ironic because the great actor, Edward G. Robinson, his last scene ever before he died was a deathbed scene. It's the deathbed scene in Soylent Green.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and do you remember the Edward G. Robinson deathbed scene?
Uh-huh.
Okay, you know, death is handled nicely and cleanly and tidily, and when you're ready to go, you just show up at the suicide facility, basically.
Okay.
And they wheel you into a room, and it's got what basically you and I would recognize as an IMAX screen in it, and full Dolby 7.1 surround sound and THX and DBX and all of that stuff. And you lay there in your bed with your little sheet over you, and they project, and you pick out whatever it is you want to see. And remember, this is a world that has been completely poisoned, where people live on protein crackers instead of food, and the rich eat meat once in a while.
Mm.
And Edward G. Robinson's rolled in front of the screen, and he's chosen, and you know, as you die, you get to see that which is most pleasing to you. And what they project on the screen in the movie is something that Edward G. Robinson could never see out in the real world. They show him movie footage of nature. Little fawns grazing in an upland pasture. Aspen trees golden in the autumn light. High mountains. It's like, you know, National Geographic or something.
Right.
And that's what he watches as he expires. We're getting to that. We are really, really getting to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just an outrage, and it just makes me so angry that the knee-jerk response is to, oh, no, hide, you know, lie, cover. You know what I'm saying? And it's so disgusting, Bob. I can't even... And just a quick comment about what you're saying before. Yeah, hello, why do they need to shoot a 19-year-old five times? Can you explain that shit to me?
Yeah, and again, let's kind of try to be a little sterile and forensic about this. If it's a melee and it's a machine gun and it's, you know, maybe he gets stitched across the chest.
No, this was
one in the leg, one in the knee, one in the gut, one in the head, one in the shoulder. These things happen with that kind of weaponry. That's not what happened to Furkan Dogan. He had four point blank shots in his head and one in his chest. That is classic. Classic execution style killing.
Okay, so because it's not like a Natalie Holloway, though, it's a Turkish guy, what? We're supposed to back off of that? I mean, what in the world? How in the world is the Obama administration dealing with this? This is an American citizen. Hello? Where's the outrage?
I know.
I mean, it's so disgusting, and that bit you read from Hillary, it's like, exactly. You can't do no better than that. And where are these people who they're holding? What are these hostages? What's the deal with that? What are their terms for releasing them people?
You know, it's funny because a lot of, I guess there's training that when you get taken captive, when you get taken hostage by the Israelis, the one thing in the world you don't want to do is give your name. You don't show up with ID. Because I guess then they make your life a living hell. And so instead they just hold them in debt. You know, how long was Cynthia McKinney held?
Was it 4 days or something?
Yeah, it seven. Yeah, and they're still holding hostages. There's reportage out from real journalists who, by definition, that means they're not American. Mm. Paul McGough, chief correspondent for the Sydney Morning Herald in Istanbul, filed an eyewitness account. Get this. I hate to read to folks, but just bear with me for a minute, Sandra. Mm. After 4 days at sea, our correspondents witnessed the Israeli assault on the Gaza flotilla. The Israeli attack was timed, with the first sentence, and I want to start screaming. The Israeli attack was timed for dawn prayers, when a good number of the men aboard the Mavi Marmara were praying on the aft deck of the big Turkish passenger ferry as it motored steadily through the international waters in the eastern Mediterranean Sea. The call to prayer could be heard across the water, haunting chords made tinny by the ship's PA system, yet haunting enough amid tension sparked several hours earlier when the six ship's captains in the Free Gaza flotilla rejected a demand radioed by the Israeli Navy, change course away from the Gaza Strip or be confronted with lethal force. So all this BS that Michael Savage blathers about how they landed with nothing but paintball guns. They were little worms on hooks that were hung out over the sharks. It's a lie. The Israeli Navy told this flotilla, this unarmed flotilla, it would be confronted with lethal force. And this piece is just stunning in it. Then the tightening noose, sneaking up and around every boat. There were bullet-shaped hulks, which soon became impossible to hide as the moonlight made fluorescent tubes of their rolling wakes. First one, then two, then maybe four could be seen sneaking in from the rear. They hunted like hyenas, moving up and ahead on the flanks, pushing in, then peeling away, and finally lagging before lunging. But as they came alongside the Mavi Marmara, the dozen or so helmeted commandos in each assault craft copped the full force of the ferry's fire hoses and a shower of whatever its passengers found on deck or could break from the ship's fittings. Suddenly, sound bombs and tear gas were exploding on the main aft deck. And it goes on and on and on.
The thing is that the U.S. is like, hello, what are you doing? You know, obviously Israel is what Finkelstein called them, a lunatic state. That was his words.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite perfect because that's crazy. And Netanyahu is still... Ugh, they're terrible. They're really doing their country a disservice because they buy their own BS and they don't realize that the rest of the world is like, what the F? Only the U.S. I think the rest of the world is like thinking, oh my God, even Dave Cameron came out like condemning.
Yeah, so much for that. You know, was that the first taste we got of the limitations on the special relationship?
Whatever, but I was surprised. He came out strong, like, oh, no, this is terrible. You know what I mean? But
Kevin Rudd did the same thing.
Yeah, they're still upset because they, you know, had their fake English passports when they did that botched assassination in Dubai. I mean, the Netanyahu government has had one nightmare after another, you know. It's such a terrible government. I don't know what to make of them. But anyway, listen, now, your show should be over with.
Well, I think I'm going to go a little long, but yeah.
But
Malloy is apparently off air tonight, not feeling so good or some such. So,
okay. Well,
you know, I'll eat up a little bit of time.
Yeah, okay, but I'm waiting for you know, the usual outrage when one of our citizens are sort of taken out, right?
Yeah. You know, would it be, and I got to ask you, Sandra, would Furkan Dogan's case be any different if his name was Furkan O'Malley?
Well, exactly. No, I just.
But no, it wouldn't, because they killed Rachel Corey, and we sat and sucked our thumbs then too.
No, I mean, I remember that, and that the way that poor child died, it was horrific. I thought, are you kidding me? And it was just crickets, like there is now. But there's, I mean, aren't there like three Americans locked up in Iran at the moment too?
There are.
You know, I don't really see a bunch of movement on that front either.
No, I guess we're just at one of those points where, well, you know, kick us around, whatever.
You know, I'm just thinking, okay, what's that about? But no, I.
Well, look what it took to get the two young women out of North Korea. Remember that?
Oh, right. Right.
Had to send Bill.
Right, that was when Clinton had to go over there and you know, work his magic, right?
Yeah, and the right wing, oh, they hated that.
Whatever, it worked, though, didn't it?
Yeah, see.
Oh, no. Well, no, all this is, I don't, so what is the latest with this Gulf spill, though? Are they going to cap it, or are they just have more oil coming out now?
Well, no, they're in preparations to try the cap, to try to get the cap on.
And is this a big building again, or what is this?
No, this is something that fits over that top pipe. That will literally clamp. If I understand it, Sparky was talking about it a minute ago. It'll clamp on. So the question is there a nipple on top of it? And I know I keep asking that, and I'm not trying to be cute by using that word.
Well, I was just about to ask you myself. I'm like, is there a way for them to cipher? You know,
if there is, that means they're still trying to get the damned oil to market.
Well, no, exactly. But isn't there? I'm sorry. How is any kind of lid they can put on it with the amount of pressure? Are we supposed to believe this is supposed to work?
They're hoping we will.
But no, isn't the idea of a relief tunnel to alleviate pressure, isn't that part of it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, won't this cap just blow off? I don't know, I'm sorry. Why don't they just sink a huge battleship on top of it?
You know, at this point, well, I was being about halfway facetious, but I really am. I'm still waiting for Tony Hayward to come out doing a smarmy British version of Dr. Evil and saying that he wants sharks with frickin' laser beams.
Good Lord. Yeah, well, you know, it's...
Because that's how silly it has gotten.
No, it's outrageous. I mean, you know, that whole bit that Jon Stewart did sort of says it all, you know? Didn't he name all seven tribes?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just mortifying when you look at it like that. You're like, good Jesus, you know? I don't know. I don't really have much faith in...
Well, if you're at a point, Sandra, where you don't have much, I ain't got none. and frankly, I'm down to living inside my lizard brain, and I'm real mean about it, and I know, but you know what? I want to see Tony Hayward dipped in crude.
No, and I'm sick of seeing these little articles in the Financial Times and all these other sort of financial bits and pieces I look at saying, oh, we're not too sure if he will make it. You know, he may have to step down. I'm like, you know what? It is so disgusting in that rarefied world that they occupy how they talk about each other. Never any accountability. The most accountability is he may have to step down and what? Take another CEO job at a smaller oil company?
Or, you know, get invited to sit on the board of the Carlyle Group. You know how it works.
You know what I mean? And it's just, this fool, that guy needs to be put in jail. He's so disgusting with his off comments that he keeps making. It's incredible.
Yeah, Agnes just walked in because she heard me carrying on, and she said, no, really, tarred and feathered and run out on a rail. If it was good enough for use during during our little insurgency against Mother England back in the day, tar, feathers, rail, Tony.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's terrible. He is just so epitomizes that whole group, you know. But anyway, I'll let you go. I just I'm just so.
I just wish I had some intellectual response to this, but I'm done. I don't. I'm done. I'm licked.
Oh no! It's purely pretty much emotional because those pictures. You know,
I've got the other end of that spectrum, and it's precious. You know our buddy Reverbo, right?
Yeah.
Well, Reverbo just sent me an email. And by the way, he's got a really, really great essay over at headonradionetwork.com right now from Cavalcade of Crazy. Cavalcade of Crazy goes to a book sale. It's awesome.
Okay.
It's awesome. Reverbo just sent me an email, and the subject line says, "When they're not coated with sludge, they can actually fly." And the text says, "Here's Howard and Larry and Barry and me. The day I was helping the Audubon Society band pelicans last summer on Cape Fear River. I love these guys. I despise those who disregard innocent life. I despise those who disregard life, period. And I'm looking here at to the extent that those photographs that I directed people to at Think Progress were an absolute horror. Maybe I got to figure out some way to post, if Reverbo will allow, to post a couple of these photographs of Howard and Larry and Barry. Howard and Larry and Barry are pelican chicks, Sandra.
Okay.
And they've still got their little downy pelican down on them. They're not even fully feathered yet. And they're adorable. Oh, they're, you know, big, bad, mean Bob. They're cute.
Right.
They are. They're sitting on their nest, and they're just sitting there being pelicans, not being oil-covered, waiting to be grown-up pelicans. And to the extent that, we got those the horrible, hateful pictures of the sludge-coated pelicans, we need to remember, sort of like Edward G. Robinson in the end of the movie, what the real thing looks like before it gets covered in sludge.
Well, yeah, and the whole idea that, you know, these poor creatures aren't able to go through the normal cycle, it's so disgusting. It's just like, you know, it's just horrible. The number of dead turtles, I'm so disturbed. I really like turtles. And I'm just sort of like, are you kidding me?
Oh, I love things that live to be 500 years old.
Those are some of the most hardiest things on the planet. And so I was hearing someone saying they've already counted, like, you know, 23. And they're not that common. And they're just turning up dead, you know?
And, you know, this is one of those fundamental flaws with our legal system. At best, the killing of that wildlife is deemed property damage. Let that one roll around for a little bit. That'll send you screaming into the night. Property damage.
You mean in their legal?
Yeah. They're, it's property damage.
This is like priceless, all this. I don't know what. The only price that I see is BP needs to not exist anymore. I don't mean some buyout. It needs to be however you destroy it.
Corporate death penalty.
It needs to go away. I don't understand. Can't we take them in receivership? Other countries do it all the time.
Well, Robert Reich was arguing that very thing just a couple of days ago. Why not? You know, Barack Obama, President Obama, gave his big "We cannot have another generation dependent on fossil fuel energy" speech at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh just a couple of days ago. Maybe the first step of that is taking BP's assets into receivership and dismantling it.
No, but see, the only thing he can do seems to be is to take over car companies and make useful factories idle and workers too. He seems to be able to do that all right. So I don't know why he can't exert his power and put this company out of its misery and perhaps in some of ours, you know?
You know, it would be... I want some real solutions, and Sandra, I want real punishment, and corporate death penalty suits me fine.
And, you know, I don't want to hear about Obama meeting with, you know, fascists from Arizona. You know what I mean? I could do without that, too.
Yeah.
He met with, you know, it's just, I don't know. know, and I guess I'm like with John Stewart. It's like, you know, what did he say? Get back to the fucking spill?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm right there on that one. Well, anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
All right. Sandra, thanks so much. Take care, dear.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Later. Bye. A note coming in from Kate telling me, you know, quit, you know, stop saying you're a bad human being or whatever. Just keep venting. But do you, and this is, I'm not trying to talk down or anything. Do you understand that for me to feel like I'm feeling now is completely contrary to every iota of how I was raised and taught and educated? It's caveman stuff what I'm feeling now. Club, head, done. And I don't like that in me. If these bastards would stop creating insoluble problems, I would like to live in such a way that I can live rationally and coolly and reasonably. And you know what? Apparently so too does Barack Obama. Because the one difference between him and me right now is I'm saying it. There's a whole bunch of people all over the country that wants it to be said. I'm saying it and he ain't. At least I have the guts to admit, own up to my own flaws. Kate noting, folks are getting upset about dead animals, but are we considering that the fumes off the water and the light oil is going to kill folks slowly, just like the Katrina mold is killing folks all along the coast? Dead birds and fish offer a more in-your-face example of horror, I guess, and that's something I've been saying all along. And I hate to be mean about it, but again, this is an integrated problem. It's not one problem. The BP Chernobyl volcano is in our face. But there's 24,000 Americans right now, this instant, tonight. 24,000 Americans will be dead a year from now. Not because of the BP gusher, but because we insist on burning coal for electricity. When we have all kinds of means at our disposal to begin building right now, yesterday, 10 years ago, should have been done 30 years ago, a grid that would take advantage of free, open energy sources, 24,000 people will die. And I think that's kind of what Kate is alluding to when she says, dead birds and fish offer a more in-your-face example of horror, I guess. Dead babies and grandmas are disposable. Can we spell extinction? But again, to see those photos is visceral. To see those photos is to see something that is not an active participant in the killing off of the planet. Pelicans and ducks and egrets and herons and dolphins and porpoises and various and sundry fish and sharks and turtles are only doing what they've been doing for millions of doggone years. And would do and will do with us or without us, except for trying to do it with us, becomes more and more difficult with every passing minute. God Almighty. Craig just wrote in asking for the URL of the photos. I shot it to him. He said, these are just heartbreaking. I hope this will wake folks from the ether. Greed and apathy will destroy this planet long before some asteroid impact. And amen, Craig, amen. David in Tennessee noting, having looked at the photos. No damned wonder BP is choking off the media access. Heard from Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist, a little bit ago, with my remarks on the, you know, getting the government small enough to drown in the bathtub. He says, I think we've all been fooled. They don't want to drown the government in the bathtub. They want to drown it in the Gulf of Mexico. Why wait for government to get small when you can take it down now? William writing in about the fact that deregulation kills. Man, there's a bumper sticker our side needs to be printing in by the millions. William says, I could tell you things just about the auto repair field that would keep you off the roads. We need regulation, however, we need honesty and good pay. Just one example, he says, I worked at a very large dealership as part of a 9-person operation. It soon became one man, me. I worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and it was a fight in-house and on the customer end. Sure, they handed me a big title at the same pay, yet my conscience did not evaporate. At the start, I was quality control to make sure the techs did their job, which they were paid well for, yet under commission and competition. Then they hire new, inexperienced techs to change oil and rotate and tires and check brakes. I can't count the number of times a car left, and if not for the owners wondering what this new noise was, came back. I'd find all four wheels with lug nuts on finger tight, and even then these cars had the hubcaps hammered back on and were moved several times, so someone had to hear or see something, yet not one peep. When the customer came in to pick up their car or truck, it was for the last time, driven down a ramp off the second floor, around a bend and up a side street, and then a turn onto the pickup area, and no one noticed this loud clanking noise. I fear it's not my job enters the picture, and I fear the same applies to the safety regulations for anything, unless the worker is paid a fair wage and not overworked beyond all of this. Whatever happened to just plain old-fashioned common sense and honesty? Gone. The almighty dollar rules all. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
On death watch, you know.
Feels like it, don't it?
Yeah, well, it's what it is. I mean, we've got to be brutally honest about it at this point. You know. The entire Gulf region is toast for, you know, it hasn't happened yet, but we're just waiting. It's going to happen. It's inevitable.
It feels like, it's beginning to feel that way. This is beginning, you know, we can't begin to approach understanding or knowing what the people living through the Black Death as it careened through Europe were thinking or feeling. But yeah, they developed a really gallows sense of their own existence. They felt like it was the end of the world, and for many it was.
Yeah.
And this feels like that too. But again, Cossack, I take you back to that scene from Soylent Green that I was talking about with Sandra. Remember, if you sit down and watch that movie, you'll find that the rich were still eating meat and vegetables.
Yeah.
While the rest of the people ate Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow and Soylent Green. And that's the Tony Haywards of the world. They're going to find, you know, they've got enough money, they can find a way to survive while the rest of us scramble for scraps.
Unbelievable. And secondly, about the flotilla.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. I mean, you remember the USS Liberty?
Sure, yeah. Brian was talking about that just last night, I think. 1967?
Mm-hmm.
How many American sailors were killed in a deliberate attack?
Yeah, which lasted several hours. This wasn't an oops.
No, they poured. No, the Israelis poured it on the poor Liberty.
Mm-hmm. The whole point is they were trying to sink it. And only when they heard a distress call that was actually responded to did they get the idea that this isn't going to work? Jeez Christ. I mean, and the worst part of it is our own government hushed the entire affair up.
Yeah. Just like, well, you know, it's like the story we led off the program with. I led off the program with tonight, Cossack. The Coast Guard in tandem with BP trying to keep people away from the Gulf, and the Coast Guard saying, oh, no, we never did that. We didn't do that. And then, you know, somebody actually gets hold of a copy of the BP contract. Oops. Yeah.
I worry that this is an extinction event for it. It could very well end up being. I mean, this could so upset.
And I hate to just keep driving the tack, but if it is an extinction event, it's an extinction event because it is coupled to toxins in our rivers, our lakes, our streams. You know, this is the blood flow of a planet.
I mean, look at what has happened out west with all the abandoned mining claims that are now leaching cyanide.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, I live in a, we don't even know where all of our abandoned works are in Appalachia or in the state of West Virginia. And acid mine drainage continues to roll out of practically all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that acid mine drainage, you know, it also has heavy metals. Eesh.
Well, and the thing is, nobody cares. These people aren't even paying us. They're taking our resources. This is the commons. It doesn't belong to them. They don't own the oil. You know. They're taking it from us, and they're not even paying us. All they pay for is for the frickin' lease. They do not pay for the oil they extract or for the coal they extract when they blow up a mountain, for God's sake.
No, sir. No, sir. You're right.
Yeah, this is sheer insanity. Do you remember the Death World trilogy, by any chance?
No.
I highly recommend it. It's a science fiction trilogy. And it talks about these humans who landed on this planet, and everything on this planet is designed to kill people. Everything. Flora, fauna, you name it, it's lethal, and it's out to kill you. And when you finish the trilogy, you find out what the problem is. Is basically Avatar. And we've landed on
yeah, what's you know, how ironic that movie comes out and is named and the planet is named Pandora.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. How ironic that stories like that can only be told, and you know, you can it's a different thing, but it's the same. Look at the movie Idiocracy. That's not about America 500 years from now. That's about America right now.
Exactly,
but you can only tell that story to the simpering, shivering American populace to the extent that they'll even watch it. If you make sure that you make it really clear, this is not us. This is not about you, and it's pure fantasy. You know, James Cameron's The Abyss was a science fiction movie that more or less all anticipated all of this. You know, because it was a deep sea drilling rig, was it not?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That sat on the seafloor. But sadly, there aren't any little light creatures who are going to come up and save the day.
No.
That's the bad part. Hey, Cossack, I'm stacked up again, but good hearing from you, brother.
My pleasure.
All take right.
Care.
Take care. Bye now. I just want to make sure I get to everybody. I'm, you know, I don't have it in me to do 6 hours. Come on, don't kid yourselves. But you know, we'll take the blinkers. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Garrett?
Well, you see, this whole fix that we're in, it goes back to what Jim said earlier. It's all about doing more with less. That's the corporate mentality these days. It's all about squeezing every last drop of profit and there's no regard for any life, human, animal, or, you know, human-animal hybrid to satisfy W. I mean, the perfect example of this lack of regard of human life outside of Chernobyl is, here's the thing. Last week, one of the writers of the original Thundercats cartoon was murdered. Guess what they did this week?
What?
Like today. They announced a new series. It's like, come on. And it doesn't come out till 2011. So it's not like they could have, waited a couple of weeks till the...
Not when there's a dollar to be made, Garrett. No, sir. Not when there's a buck on the line.
That's my point. And of course, nobody's ever wrong. Jim Joyce can forgive himself for, can call himself out for his colossal error in last night's Tigers game way before any of these corporate slime bags can.
Yeah, there's a Facebook page about that now, calling on Bud Selig to fix the bad call.
Which he won't.
And no, he won't. But that Facebook page will probably get more people than sign on to demand accountability from BP. See, that's my point. How many voters were there in American Idol last week? How much of an uproar was there over who won and who didn't? You know.
And the sad part is that it's just being, you know. You can't, if you have any sort of a brain, you can't even really indulge in a lot of that without getting angry. But the fact,
and see, that's the thing. You know, nobody's going to dip Tony Hayward in crude. I'm just, you know, doing some lizard brain fantasizing. That's not going to happen. But you know what? I think this is the part that pisses me off. Tony Hayward isn't even scared that it might.
Yeah, because everybody. I mean, all these people that spend all their time on, you know, that allow the recreation stuff to completely take over, a lot of them have plain given up on any of this changing. Just totally given up. Not realizing that allows these people to do what they do.
I know.
I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm known to certainly, you know, watch the sports and, you know, TV shows and all that, you know.
But you also live in reality world. It doesn't consume you. But things like American Idol are designed, because remember, what channel's that on?
Fox.
Yeah. Those things are designed to consume people's interest. Not just, you know, it's not just an adjunct to an interesting day. It is meant to be consuming. It is multi-layered marketing that is designed to make you think about it all the time.
Yeah, that's why it's taking over regular TV, the traditional TV, you know, which is why TV as a whole,
sucks,
including this reality junk, is going to die relatively soon. I mean, to bring our...
You know, I was clicking along. I actually saw a video on VH1 the other day instead of a reality show.
Oh, my God.
I didn't know what to make of it.
Wow. Did somebody... No, nobody...
Somebody screwed up.
It's not like, you know... I know they played, like, a couple of videos on MTV proper when Michael Jackson died.
I mean, somebody looks up, hey, wait, that's a music video. Why isn't Celebrity Rhinoplasty on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's like, but yeah, it's just, it's total, because to bring forth our obligatory Star Trek reference, the last episode of the first season of Next Generation, you know, had the people from the past that were cryogenically frozen, and, you know, but anyway, they dropped a little line that TV died, and TV as we know it, which is to say as people in 1987 knew it, died in 2041. I'm telling you, it's going to be a lot sooner than that. Because, I mean, the backlash is huge for this. I mean, there are people that just do, like us, there are tons of people like us that just steam over these all-encompassing things.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that that's what gets the attention in the ever-shrinking universe of television.
Wow, there's a phrase to hang on to, the ever-shrinking universe of television.
Well, think about it. I mean, other than...
And corollary to that is that the American people have the incredible shrinking attention span.
Which, I mean, you know, it's something that TV has certainly killed out of them. I mean, seriously, you know. I mean, it's funny, you know, I was like doing on one of my random net crawling things like last weekend, it was like stumbling something Disney related. It was like Walt Disney, he thought that TV should only have commercials after the opening credits, in the middle of the program, and after the program was done, because anything more lacked showmanship.
Yeah, and that's why they cut off his head and froze it. Oy.
Well, but, you know, the fact is that for all of, you know, despite the fact that he was totally against, you know, labor to the point of fanaticism, the fact is he was right on that point. I mean, I know now it's just like...
Yeah, even a stopped clock's right twice a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Garrett, I appreciate it. I'm gonna roll here because I'm fading. And
yeah,
I want to make sure I get the extra calls in.
Yeah, you're getting close to hour five here. You need to think about it or else you're going to quickly careen into this six-hour scariness.
Yeah, a little punchy. A little punchy. Not used to this.
Yeah, you're not Hartman. You can't do 6 hours in one day.
Hey, wait a minute. That sounds like a challenge.
Well,
right.
Hartman hasn't done it in quite a few years. He hasn't done it since he was on Air America.
And you know why. At least I do. Take care, Garrett.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Bye, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't exactly 16 tons or anything, but it is a little weary-making. But let's see. Are you still there? No. And you're not either. So, quitting time, 24 minutes before the hour, but that's 37 minutes of extra innings. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, a new reality show about watching obese people lose weight? Are you kidding me? That sound you hear in the distance is the hoofbeats of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. At least we're going down singing and laughing. Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist, adding in a note about the dispersants. He said, we went over the properties of the dispersant used by BP in biology the other day. The stuff is denser than water and dissolves in anything. This means it attaches to the oil, makes big pieces into small pieces, and keeps the oil under the water. When the pieces of oil are small enough, sea life will mistake it for food. BP lied about not knowing the effects of the dispersants in water. The stuff they're using is used in everything from makeup, tobacco, antifreeze, de-icer, perfumes, hydraulic machinery, tattoo ink, booze, massage oils, toothpaste, mouthwash, food color and flavorings, and so forth. Basically everything. The dispersant is a food source for ocean bacteria. The problem is it forces the bacteria to burn an excessive amount of oxygen. This is going to suck the oxygen out of the Gulf, turning it into a dead zone, a dead ocean. Google propylene glycol. Yeah, I know a little bit about propylene glycol. It's kind of what put me off the e-cigarettes when I realized that propylene glycol was the liquid suspension for the nicotine juice. Kind of a shame. I asked Lottie in the chat room because he's a bit of an authority about it, and I'm trying to find non-propylene glycol-based e-cigarette juice. I'll let you know when I find it and how it works out, because it really would be nice to quit. It really, really would be. Sparky informing me that top cap is on the top of the blowout preventer. Not latched on yet. He says, keep your fingers crossed. Yeah, for the whole planet. And that it will work better than we expect it to. Wow. What a night. It's been an interesting week. We've done extra innings two nights out of four. Let's see if there's anything that we can hit before we go just on a bang-bang sort of basis. Oh, by the way, news coming out, this from USA Today. Bernie Madoff was beaten up in prison. Being reported. The Wall Street Journal. You know, Murdoch, who knows. Journal based its report on three people familiar with the matter said the 71-year-old Madoff was treated for a broken nose, fractured ribs, and cuts to his head and face. The alleged assailant, described by the newspaper as a beefy man, was serving time at the federal prison in Butner, North Carolina, on drug charges. Madoff serving 150 years for his miserable financial crimes. I bring this up only because I refer you to my old theory of longstanding of the nature of the law. The law is concerned with the three M's: morons, meanness, and money. And to that extent, the law attempts to neutralize the morons, punish the meanness, and above all, protect the money. Bernie Madoff swindled a lot of credulous people who should have known better out of millions of dollars. I'm sorry, billions of dollars. That makes it even more important. And he got a 150-year sentence on a plea of guilty. Wasn't even tried. Pled guilty. 150 years. Goodbye, Bernie. Once I had a railroad, made it run. You know the song. And now he's been beaten up in prison. And frankly, I'm digging deep for that basement of the Baptist Church raisin I had, trying to find a give-a-damn about that. But he's doing 150 years in prison for messing with the money. Right? Yeah. Messing with the money. Sorry, the ringer comes back on at 9 p.m. Eastern. Ick. 150 years. Because he messed with the money. And yet, there is no indication whatsoever. And as I said, I think the thing that makes me craziest is the fact that Tony Hayward isn't even remotely afraid that he'll spend even a day behind bars. Not a day. And somehow, inside me, I want him to have that fear. I want him to ask himself sometimes, is it possible? I want him to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with a cold sweat running down out of those perfectly kept curls. I want a sweat rolling down his forehead and down the back of his neck with that creepy feeling that you feel when the beads of sweat start crawling down the top of your cervical spine and you can't quite reach and it feels like there's something on you. I want him to feel that. When he wakes up in that sweat, I want him to wonder, is this the day that the guys with the guns and the badges show up and take me away? But you see, I don't think in Tony Hayward's world he can even conceive of the possibility. It is in the universe that Tony Hayward inhabits, that is not allowed to happen to him any more than human beings can flap their arms and fly. Any more than rocks can speak. It's a violation of the natural laws of Tony Hayward's universe that someone could come and do justice unto him and take him off for trial and conviction, sentencing and imprisonment forever. That's impossible. It couldn't possibly happen because he's above that. He's better than that. If he wanted to be part of that crowd that could happen to, by God, he wouldn't be an oil company CEO. N'est-ce pas? Just in case you were curious, May was a good month. As the Gulf of Mexico became more toxic, May was a great month. May was a great month to be a member of Congress. In May, Halliburton PAC donated $17,000. It was the busiest donation month for Halliburton PAC since September 2008. 13 of 14 contributions in that stack, and I wonder if that's a misprint. $17,000 seems a bit paltry for lobbyists. 13 of the 14 contributions went to key Republicans on the committee investigating the BP horror. About a week before Executive Timothy Probert appeared before the House Energy and Commerce's Investigative Subcommittee, Halliburton donated $1,500 to ranking Republican Joe Barton of re-election effort. Well, thank you very much. Joe Barton's one of those CO2 is natural guys, one of the guys who needs to go to Mars and breathe some of it. Then they gave, $2,500 to former Representative Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania running against Joe Sestak for a Senate seat. It was nice to be a U.S. Senator as well. Idaho Repiglick and Mike Crapo. He sits on Environment and Public Works, where languishes, by the way, S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. Mike Crapo got him some money. And Georgia Republican Johnny Isaacson, who's on the Commerce Committee, got him some money. And North Carolina Repiglick and Richard Burr on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, he got him some money. Chuck Grassley got him some money. Just $1,000 here and $1,000 there. You know, just a little handshake. It's just like, you know, hey, because, you know, that's a good dinner in D.C., Once you order up the pooey fousay and the caramel consistency food mousse. Remember the food mousse from the beginning of the program? Yeah, some food mousse. We're gonna have some pooey fousay and some food mousse. By the way, just as a sort of a gentle reminder of what I keep saying about the fact that, you know, this isn't happening in a vacuum, and it's happening during the Obama administration, but it has, what did Granny Clampett say, roots that go clean to the liver? Yeah, his tongue's got roots in his liver. Back during the Bush administration, BP and other oil companies paid for dozens of trips and meals for officials from the Department of Interior, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Homeland Security. BP's biggest tab for goodies and gifts to government officials, however, that was the highest tab among all oil and gas companies. BP and its affiliates, BP America and BP Exploration, show up in the gift reports at least 16 different times during that time period, paying for meals as well as for oil and gas industry seminars and tours of oil facilities. And, gentlemen, you'll notice in this room, well, I'll be damned.
Somebody left a bottle of Louis the 14th cognac in here. Well, kiss my grits. I don't know what we're going to do. Well, you want to drink some? And I'll be damned. Look over there. Look at the son of a bitch. That's Ocetra caviar. Somebody was very careless with the caviar on this in this oil facility. Luckily, they left crackers. Jiminy. You know, just in case you were keeping track. So we will knock off here in a minute or so. We'll be back tomorrow night. I want to thank Susie Turnbull for joining us earlier this evening. That was awfully kind and good and gracious of her. Remember to write your member of Congress or your senators about the International Violence Against Women Act. A gentle reminder, we are in June. We are raising June's funding so that there can be a horn in July. Right now we're trying to fill up the $300 or $400 hole left from what we didn't do in May. We are about $200 away from zero. Be nice to get back to zero. If you can, and if you haven't lately, contributions are gladly accepted at headonradionetwork.com. There's a PayPal button under the tab Contribute, as well as the snail mail address if you prefer to do snail mail. You know, when you contribute to the horn, you're not just doing it in your own name. I mean, you are. But you're making sure the horn is available to even folks who, for a variety of reasons, can't contribute. And I thank you on their behalf for that. Oh, the phone. I got to figure out how to fix that. There we go. Thanks to everybody who makes the program happen. Because it takes a lot. And everybody here is a volunteer. And no one gets paid. Before I do the credits, though, one last moment. Write down his name. F-U-R-K-A-N. D-O-G-A-N. And remember that he was an American born in the United States of America, raised in the United States of America, and he died trying to do what practically every religion on earth teaches, to render aid to those grievously in need. But before he could do it, some Israeli put 4-point-blank bullets in his head and one in his chest. Remember Furkan Dogan. For it is the least, the very least, that any of us can do. Thank you to Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Thanks to our columnist, Reverbo, A Cavalcade of Crazy, goes to a book sale, is available at a headonradionetwork.com website near you. No, really, read it. Trust me, you need a smile right now. And it'll give you one. My head writer is David in Tennessee. In addition to the contributions that you make to keep the horn on the air, so too does Coal River Mountain Watch do its part to keep the horn on the air. CRMW.net and CoalRiverWind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.